The mighty lions from Zion ignite the flame of what I am. Tossing fire, leaving Babylon trying, trying to escape this futile. Who child is time to trouble is too wild. That's why we got more than two styles. Two adept in the situation, who child. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this time to wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, critical and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then at TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. And that first Facebook search engine is just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out the Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting things being placed in the marketplace all the time. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, an interesting topic coming up with a special guest, author, educator, and master teacher, Dr. Kaba Kamini, will be joining us this evening to talk about his new book, Spirituality Before Religions, always one of my favorite topics. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and it's 7:13 here in the city of Philadelphia. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum, here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellie.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine and, you know, looking forward to our discussion with Brother Kamini. I'm sorry for stumbling over the name. But I also want to, you know, recognize that, you know, I know that those of us who are Afropeans may be celebrating Mother's Day, but those of us who are African-centered, as we have been since we've been here, transforming or things as our experience has made us do, would like to honor and recognize the mother principle on this day. I think it's important that we, you know, as we have our discussions about our Africanness, that we recognize the principles that, you know, we brought with us through the Maafa and the African, the mother principle. I think it's something that we should hold up and honor whenever we can. And let's take this opportunity to do that.
Who you say, Afropeans, Richard?
Yeah. Hey, I can't. Well, I'll leave that alone.
Yeah, you know, this is always one of my favorite topics to discuss. I think the last time we talked about it was with Penn State professor Earl Henderson.
Yes.
When he was on about a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago. And a lot of this is contained in his latest book and his new book that's, I think, is going to be just released. Always one of my favorite topics anyway to talk about, and we're going to do it with author, educator, master teacher, Dr. Kaba Khemeini. Dr. Khemeini, also known as Booker T. Coleman from the Hidden Colors Collection, and his latest book, Spirituality Before Religion. And, you know, when I build this and put it up so people can read the little synopsis, I wrote how our ancestors' spiritual practices are manifest in our behaviors today, and understanding this, how we can change our people's destiny moving forward. And I think that we're going to uncover a lot of these in our conversation this evening with Dr. Kaba Khemeini. Let me get him in here. Dr. Kaba, how are you, sir?
My brother, I am doing excellent. To you, Brother Elliot, and to Brother Richard, I thank you for this opportunity. And also, I'm very happy to know that I'm speaking to my brothers and sisters from the city of brotherly love, but also the environs and everyone else that can tap in. But I send my regards to my family in Philadelphia. I've had many great days in Philadelphia, so I thank you for this opportunity to be able to speak to the community. And I thank you for your interest. And I also thank you for a most appropriate title, because it is time for an awakening.
Okay. All right, sir. Dr. Khemeini, before we get started this evening and talk about the new book and related topics to that subject, let's talk about why you... Now, the last book you wrote is not that... Oh, in fact, it just recently came out, the book honoring... William Leo Hansberry, and
yes.
And then you did this title. Why did you yes. do it? Why did you do this particular title at this time?
Because it is my African tradition that we always do libation and pay homage and respect to our ancestors. And because of my background in education, and because I really focus in on curriculum development and staff and community development in terms of teaching our children, before I set out on my career in book writing, because I'm a curriculum writer, but I was advised to start writing books. And so I began the process by doing a libation. And that's why the title of my book is Honoring Professor William Leo Hansberry, An Intellectual Libation to the Architect for America's African Studies program. Because if you're into African studies, if you have a Black Studies program in your college or in your school, if you work towards studying your history and your culture, you have to know who Professor William Leo Hansberry is. He is a gentleman that developed the African Studies program at Howard University in 1922. He came up against odds and trials and tribulations that I get embarrassed to think I'm having a rough time. And I felt that in honoring William Leo Hansberry, I opened up the portal for me to begin my book writing career. So my first book, you could say, is Spirituality Before Religion.
Okay.
But I could not get to that book without honoring and doing a libation to our ancestors who have made this possible. It is a proverb that if you do not call upon your ancestors when you are about to do something, you are acting alone. And it goes against African tradition to act alone. You always call your ancestors in order to support you and to guide you in whatever endeavor you have. And so that's why I did William Leo Hansberry first. It is a libation to our ancestors who have made all of this possible. The Black Studies program of the 50s and 60s, indirectly or directly, you were impacted by William Leo Hansberry. Some of the greatest scholars, who I consider to be my teacher, Professor John Henry Clark, when you did the piece on history being a clock and geography being a compass, he was the one that advised me to do my first thesis on William Leo Hansberry. He was a student of William Leo Hansberry. He brought Professor Hansberry to New York to teach at the New School for Social Research back in the late 90s. Chancellor Williams, Nnamdi Azikiwe, Kwame Nkrumah used to leave Lincoln College, Lincoln in Pennsylvania there. And he would come to Washington, D.C. to sit at the feet of William Leo Hansberry. So that this is an individual that I felt we all should know who he is. If you're interested in your culture, if you're interested in formalizing it in a school, you need to know who William Leo Hansberry was and continues to be in the development of our consciousness. Because back in 1922, to my brother Elliot and to my brother Richard, he understood back then it was a time for an awakening. And that's what he dedicated his life to.
Wow. Dr. Kaba, what I want to do in getting you to talk about the latest book, Spirituality Before Religion, I want to point out, without necessarily speaking of any religion in particular, even though the majority of our people, I think they, some stats say over 80 or 85, 90% of our people here in this country are Christians. Without speaking of any religion in particular, I want to kind of slow walk this to certain points that we use in our daily practices of religious observance and get you to point out the origin of these things. And I'm going to start at various areas. I want to try to cover the resurrection. I want to try to cover baptism, births and deaths, libations. But what I want to first start with is the concept of God, because I contend, and me and Richard have talked about this on the program and had guests to talk about it, I contend that our concept of God, and I'm talking about us as a people, has European overtones, I'll put it that way, to be nice, I'll put it that way, that we look at the concept of God from European eyes. And if we understand that all of these nationalities and all of these religions start from the continent, I think it's important for us to understand that the concept of God from our ancestors' point of view. And I want you to start there and talk about this from the standpoint of your research and the book.
That was the point of my writing the book, Spirituality Before Religions, with the subtitle, Spirituality is Unseen Science, Science is Seen Spirituality. That became very important. That's very important for us to understand. In other words, see, we have to get into an African framework of thinking. So that goes back to your other point about having, we've been Europeanized. The reason why I did not mention any religion in the book, and the only time I spoke about religions in the book is at the end at the book list, in case you want to study and understand how all religions came out of Africa. But I wanted to set it up so that I didn't offend people, because I don't have a religion for people. I don't know what to be. People ask me, what religion do you belong to? I say, I'm an African. They're all mine. And the concept of the creator or the God has to come down to this for me. In all of the holy books that I've read, and I've done comparative religion courses before, so I have a sense of the major religions and some of the minor religions. The bottom line is, when you go back to Africa, there's one concept to understand, and it comes into what I call two cosmic laws. They're two universal laws that apply not just on the earth, but throughout the entire universe and the cosmos. Number one is that each and every one of us is the creator having a human experience. The second cosmic law says to treat the creator's creations as you treat yourself as the creator having a human experience. Because if we really believed that each and every one of us was the creator, we'd be very careful how we speak to each other and how we act towards each other. Because we would understand the Ma'atian, Ma'at being the symbol of justice and righteousness and balance and harmony, according to the African traditions. We would understand clearly that whatever you do outside of yourself, whatever you do to transgress or to complement the Creator's creations, which includes water, earth, so it's important to understand air, the animals of that have been created, the botany, the plants and the animals, and then each other, respect and honor. That was our concept. That's the creator, how we treat each other, how we respect each other, the relationships between the male energy and the female energy. It's all part of it. Brother Richard was saying earlier about Afro-Europeans who celebrate many of the celebrations of Europe. But the bottom line to us is that there is no Mother's Day. Life is Mother's Day. Because if it wasn't for your mama, you wouldn't be here. So I'm grateful every day for my mother. I don't need one day. But we're in a civilization that chooses only to honor things on one day because that's how they do it. And, of course, it's money-making. If you look at the restaurants and the flower shops, it's a big day for them. But the bottom line is every day was a Mother's Day. Every day was a Father's Day. Every day was a Grandmother's Day. Every day was a day to live. This is an African tradition. And, you know, we do it. We do it, although it's shaded with a European leaning, but we still do it. We do it every day, no matter what they may try. As you look at the way in which the rituals, well, see, there's ceremony and ritual. They both fall within the category of performances. A ritual is an act that you go through that you are calling upon the ancestors and the creator to come out of you into the room. You have no expected outcomes. Ceremonies are the same types of performances, except you're expecting an outcome, like a birth, a marriage, mm-hmm. something on that order.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line for us, family, is that when you study the call and response of the African tradition, when you study the role that music plays in our ceremonies, when you study the way in which you can go back to the Twa people, the original human beings on the planet, they gave birth to the Kushites. The Kushites then brought forward themselves as Kemites. When you look at that, there's something that you understand. The way in which they established their ceremony is the same way it looks when you look at the Black Baptist Church or the African Methodist Episcopal Church. It's the same exact ceremony. Even when you go to a Black Roman Catholic church, it's different than when you go to a European-based Roman Catholic church. We can't help but bring the flavor of Africa into everything that we do. But in our ignorance of understanding the roots of Africa in what we do, we think we're doing someone else's thing. We don't realize they're doing our thing wrong.
Listen, I want to go back to something you just stated, and that kind of filters into my next question before I pass the mic to Brother Richard. You talked about the ceremony and the way we do things honoring an Almighty. And my next question kind of goes into that. The way we handle our popular church ceremonies with the minister and a call and a type of response from the people or the audience. First, before I ask that, the concept of prayer, because all of these subjects is going to kind of blend right in as far as I see it. That concept of prayer, you mentioned about the two African principles, and I wrote them down. Love and respect the creator within you, and love and respect the nature of God within yourself. That concept of prayer, it seems to me that you're saying that our ancestors' basic understanding and respect of an Almighty was your thoughts and deeds towards one another. But we have a European concept of prayer, especially organized prayer, where it's your prayer to a unseen God and basically nothing else. Am I wrong in that analysis? Talk about it from your perspective.
Well, I grew up Roman Catholic.
Okay.
Choir boy, altar boy, even want to be a priest. And when I used to go to church with my mother was Roman Catholic. My father was African Methodist Episcopal, Mother AME Zion Church in Harlem. And when I used to go to the church, the Roman Catholic Church, with my mother, they would, and it wasn't for anything in particular, we would just go to what we call light candles. Normally we did it on Saturday. And what I noticed was that there was a small candle, there was an intermediate candle in size, and there was a big candle. The big candle was $5. The intermediate candle was $1, and the little candle was 25 cents. And of course, my mother and I used to always light the 25 cent candle. But I asked my mother, I said, Mom, if we light a 25 cent candle and that man over there is lighting the $5 candle, is his prayer going to be answered before ours? That's one of the straws that began to break the camel's back with me as it related to religion, because I was trying to figure out exactly what is this God that is so loving that it's according to how much you give him that decides if he's going to answer your prayer or not. The prayer that you say is something that is a conversation. I think of a mother and child when you think about a day like today. And you have a mother and child. And mother wants to hear from the child. Just talk to me. You know, say hello to me. That's all I need. And we have created an elaborate money-making way of expressing our prayers. We even have written books on how to pray. And to write a book on how to pray is like writing a book on how to talk to somebody. The Creator is just looking for a conversation. And when you talk to yourself, you are talking to the Creator. You are the Creator. You are the Creator inside and outside. When you look at the basic stories that are told about the before the beginning began, when you get those stories, you get to understand certain things about how things began. In the very beginning, before the beginning began, the Creator wanted to know him herself. And what became important was the Creator being pure energy. We're talking science now. Being pure energy cannot know itself. Energy cannot know energy because of the nature of its pure energy form. So what began to happen scientifically was the elaborate evolution of entities, of beings that would be able to reflect on themselves and know that they are the creator having a human experience that would fulfill the original creator of all's life system. And to do that, the cosmos came into being. That is why I begin with cosmic history in spirituality before religions. Because when you look at the date of our Earth, if you want to look at it and try to put it into numbers, I'm scared of numbers, but just let's put it out there for a point of departure. Let's say you want to put it like Dr. Carl Sagan did in a 12-month calendar, where the first moment of January 1st was the Big Bang. And where we are right now in 2020 is the last moments of the last day, December 31st of the cosmic year, at the end of the day. If that would be true, the Earth would have been born on September 15th, which would have been 8.5 billion years, because every month equals a billion years in cosmic science. The Earth did not form itself. It did not come into existence until September 15th, 8.5 billion years after the cosmos came into being. It is believed within the African tradition we have existed before the beginning began. We happen to have concretized ourselves. Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, Brother Kaba, the listeners, we concretized ourselves, came into existence when our mommy and daddy had their Big Bang and then brought forward us. But we existed before that. We existed before the beginning began. We will exist even after. There's no such thing as death in the African mind. It doesn't exist. Death is but a doorway into the next room of the eternal temple of immortality. When you were conceived, that was a doorway from coming out of the Nun, coming out of the original ancestor and creator. We were then separated and we were entombed. So many times Africans look at death like Dr. King looked at death on his tombstone. That is one brother that had it right, what he put on his tombstone, because it was believed that our bodies became a tomb for the spirit that was captured at conception. And death was the return of the soul into the cosmos. So when Dr. King said, free at last, thank God Almighty, I'm free at last, that's a truism right there. That is an African concept that upon death you are free. This is why, like in Louisiana and in other ceremonies, they take your body to the cemetery, sad. But they come back rejoicing, singing when the saints go marching in. Because death, while it has a mortal sadness to it, it has a spiritual liberation. So prayer is a word that we give to those dwelling within us. For instance, libations are not asking or calling the names of ancestors to bring them into the room to share the experience. When you call upon your ancestors, you are not calling them from the outside in. You are calling from the inside of you to come out to be shared in the room. So when I wrote the book on William Leo Hansberry, that was not me looking at William Leo Hansberry from outside of myself. That book is my reflection of the inner William Leo Hansberry within me. And that becomes very important, because one of the things that Western civilization did in the contamination of the African thought of spirituality was that they created anthropomorphic concepts, mm-hmm. which means that you create men in particular, but you create human beings out of essences of nature, as opposed to looking at the quality of that particular essence in nature. And where is it in you? So that in Kemet, in Egypt, in Kush, when they took the body of a man or a woman and put a cat's head on top, they were not worshiping the cat. They were worshiping the divine gift given to the cat, which one of the gifts that cats have is agility. You know, they can move around, they can scatter. Not only that, but cats are also said to have nine lives. So on the earth, the concept of a cat head, Bastet, they didn't worship the cat. What they said is, I would like that God-given quality of having nine lives, which means that you can come back from adversity. It means that you can resurrect yourself. Nine is a sacred number. That has nothing to do with the actual nine times. Nine is a sacred number, which is the conclusion of all things, that you can resurrect yourself on earth. That's what the cat represented. Heru, the falcon, did not worship the bird. They worshiped the God-given gift that the falcon has of vision. When it comes to the owl has the ability to turn its head 360 degrees. It also can see in the dark. And so the quality of the owl to be able to see all angles of things, which is considered to be wise, to be able to see intelligence in the dark, being nocturnal, was a gift that that Africans wanted. So it didn't have anything to do with worshiping animals and plants. It was understanding that the Creator gave specializations to everything and all that exists. And if we could, as humans, embody those specialties, then we would be like the Creator's creation. And that's why we have such a regard and respect for them.
Brother Richard.
I'm overwhelmed, as usual. And I thank you for really helping us and helping me. I'm being selfish and helping to see our African genius. One thing that I, in formulating my questions for you to help us out was, as you were laying out the whole thing about science, cosmic law, I wanted to give and the whole thing of moving from the Twa to the Kush to Kemet, and your broader giving us the broader cosmic understanding of time, right? You know, that whole 8 months, that what's that, eight billion years, and Africans being the first human. I think I've heard you say, you make us want to be clear that Africans are the first humans. And what the question I was formulating was the question about giving us agency. When you mentioned about spirituality is unseen science and science is spirituality seen, I believe that's how you said it.
Sort of, kind of, but yes.
Yeah. Would you say Africans utilize the scientific method to come to their understanding of the universe? And is that scientific method that Africans, those first humans, use similar to the method, say, that they, celebrate in Europe coming out of the 17th century? Because I just think it's important for us to understand it. It just wasn't something popped up out of the air that Africans come to these understandings of our relationship to the universe and all. That it is an understanding we went through to come to this conclusion, if I'm correct.
You know, my brother, it's interesting. The first thing I'd like to tell you is that not only is the African the first human, Africans are the only humans on the planet. Mm. And that might be kind of hard for folks to come to.
Help us with that, Dr. Kyle.
Well, Eurasians are Africans that have been depigmented.
Okay.
They're Africans too. There's only one race on the planet from a scientific perspective. That's the human race. Humans were born to be black. Plants were born to be green. That's the law of chlorophyll. That's the law of melanin. That's just a scientific fact. Now, all this other illusion that we get caught up in is a whole nother conversation altogether. These are all emotional, Western-inspired illusions to make them feel good about themselves not realizing that they really are mutations.
Now, before you expound, and because you was answering something that Richard asked, let me throw this in. If you just deal with what you say in the science of it, and I'm no historian or I'm no scientist as yourself, but just looking at some of the stuff that Europeans have admitted to, if you look at some of the earliest reconstructions of Europeans, they admit that these people were black. If you look at some of the earliest civilizations in Asia, some of the people, I'm talking about Asian historians, will admit that the origin of a lot of these civilizations were black. So I just want to say that in reference to what you just said. And am I right, or did I get something twisted?
No, but brother, this is science. You're absolutely right. Let me take it one step further. It wasn't until about 8,000 years ago that the European existed. And then about 6,000, maybe 5,000 B.C., in the coming together of what's called the Proto-Dravidian, or the Proto, the after Grimaldi, who is the original European, and the Proto-Cro-Magnon would give birth to Indo-Europeans. Now, nature has it so that, and if you don't believe, oh, first of all, let me just say to the audience and to you, my brother Elliot, and to my brother Richard, don't believe a word I say. I'm not saying, what I say, what I teach is not meant for anyone to believe me. I just want to make you think it's a time for an awakening. And considering what's happening now, I'd like to put a cue on that. And I'd like to say it's a time for a quickening, because we better awake pretty quick. Because if we don't wake up pretty quick, some of us ain't waking up at all. Because nature is calling on us now. Nature is telling us, wake up and understand what you have to do. The fact is that for thousands of years, the only people in Asia were African, melanated people. For thousands of years. It's not until about 2,000 years B.C., about 4,000 years, that the Africans that got trapped in the Worm Ice Age is going to cross back over the mountains like the Caucasus Mountains and the Himalaya Mountains and the Pyrenees Mountains that locked these Africans into an ice age that had the effect of depigmenting them, that you're even going to have a concept of them. Now, when they came out the mountains, the first thing they should have done when they joined the melanated family in Southern Asia or in Southern Europe, they should have found the biggest, darkest, most melanated person to mate with in order for them to rejoin the human archetype, which was the melanated human. Humans were born to be black. Plants were born to be green. If you have a plant that is faded, it's called an albino plant. If you have a human that is faded, that's an albino human. If you got a cockroach, a white cockroach, that's an albino cockroach. If you have a white peacock, that's an albino peacock. In fact, in Spain, they had a white gorilla called Snowflake. You can Google Snowflake. Mm-hmm. He died of melanoma. He died of skin cancer. And that gorilla would not mate with any other gorilla but a black female. Because nature told him, if you go after that white woman, you are going to never exist anymore because you're not going to be able to reproduce yourself. The same thing with a peacock. The first thing that nature demands of an albino who has mutated itself from the archetype, it will be demanded of them to mate with only the archetype, which is the melanated peacock, the melanated cockroach, the melanated gorilla. But Europeans or Africans, humans, were given a gift. Intellect, reason, and language. These are the three gifts. These three gifts separate us from every other living entity on the planet. We have the ability to think. We have the ability to manipulate that thinking through reasoning. And we have the ability to share or transmit that information that we have reasoned that we know. So the first thing that those Africans that came out those mountains 2000 BC should have done was to find the archetype and begin to mate with them to get back on the track of life. But what did they do? They created a xenophobic, fear of the foreign mentality that forbid them to mate with anything other than themselves. So family, the people that we are dealing with today, that we call Eurasians, they are not mutations. They are mutations of mutations. We're talking science. Check out, go to a life history sixth grade science book. Life science. You have planetary science, you have physical science, and you have life science. Those are the three basic sciences that you study in school. This particular branch is life science. Go to the chapter on mutation. Study that. Because I taught. I've taught every grade. And I've taught every subject in the Board of Ed. I'm a New York City Board of Ed teacher. And so I've taught mutation before. And what they do, they tell you about the albino plant. They'll tell you about the albino peacock. They'll show you pictures of the albino gorilla. But they will never tell you about humanity. They'll tell you about everything else, but they won't tell you what happens to the human when they are denied the life-giving forces of sunlight, light, heat, and sound energy. They will not talk to you about that. So the point, to return back to what you're saying, brother, you're absolutely correct. The southern part, in fact, the Japanese were formed when Kushites brought South Koreans onto the island and met a black people, the Twa people, known as the Ainu. They were already short-statured Africans on the islands of Japan when the taller-stature Africans, the Kushites, the Kushite priests and priestesses, brought South Koreans onto the island. That's who the Japanese are. There's a Dr. Takano, that Dr. Shekanta Diop, the great Senegalese scholar, he quotes him. Dr. Takano, a Japanese scholar, said, to be a true samurai, you must have a bit of black blood. Africans brought the samurai system. They brought the secret society of the Yakuza into Asia. That was the African priesthood that they brought in, the Yakuza. And the Yakuza is like the Asian version of the Knights Templar, the various types of orders of knights that exist in Europe. This is our history, but we don't see it because we've been removed from it. It's time for an awakening.
I just wanted to get your reflections about this because the understanding of spirituality seems, you know, it's such a centered part of African existence, because it relates to everything relates to it, right? So that's why I wanted to understand whether you've seen that there was a deliberate process over time to come to this understanding. And let me raise it another way to just see your reflections about it. Would you say African spirituality and African philosophy is one and the same?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's one and the same. See what has happened with Europeans is when they came upon these stories, these African stories of emancipation, liberation, the resurrection of the soul, they never understood it. They were like children listening to adults telling stories with moral precepts to them. And in a child's mind, one of the first things they'll do is create anthropomorphic beings that will help them understand it. And so what they've done is that they took a metaphor and they created a literal story. around that. I'll give you an example. What Europeans did, and Eurasians in general, because they did the same thing with Buddha. Buddha don't look like that. Buddha is not a short, heavy-set man sitting down with a smile on his face. That's not the original Buddha. Buddha was a black man with kinky hair that had knots on it. All throughout Asia, you go down to Vietnam, you'll see it. If you go to Japan. And the other thing is that there are many different Buddhas of many different colors. But the most important Buddha in the Asian system is the black Buddha. That's the one that's most important. That's just the way in which they celebrate, because they know. It's the same thing when you go around and look at all of the statues of the Black Madonna, Our Lady of Czeslakowa in Poland. You know, they'll show you the Pope kneeling down, and they'll tell you about him kissing the feet of Our Lady of Czeslakowa. But what they won't show you is the statue that he's kissing, because that's a black woman with a black baby in her arms. That's older than anything Europe has. You can go to Switzerland, Italy, France, Spain. They all have black Madonnas. You can go to Mexico, and they got a black Jesus on the cross. And people will kneel in Mexico, and they will crawl to the cathedral to kiss the feet of a black Jesus. That's just history. And I was in Mexico when they did it, so I saw the Jesus, and I saw them on their knees as I was walking toward the cathedral. I saw these individuals on their knees and walking on their knees towards the cathedral. And about a half hour after I got in the cathedral, the person I passed was there, and they went up and they kissed that, and they prayed at the feet of a black Jesus. This ain't something that I'm making up. I saw this with my own eyes. And so we have to understand who we are as a people and what we have given to the world as it relates to a spiritual philosophy. Philosophie means the love of wisdom. Philo, like Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. It's the phila, which means love. Sophie or sophist comes from the African word sabah, which means wisdom and knowledge at its highest point. So philosophie is the love of wisdom. And the love of wisdom is for you to know that you are the creator having a human experience. And so it's one and the same. You see, we have this ethereal view towards spirituality. I have a very scientific view. And science means knowledge, seeing. That's why one of the aspects of God, even to all of the religions, is to be omniscient. Omnipotent means all-powerful. Omniscient means all-knowing. Science isn't just oceanography and biology and chemistry. Science is all knowledge. And so you can't separate the two. And the other thing is such a beautiful story. See, what disappoints me is not what has been done to African spirituality. It's that it is such a redemptive way of thinking and living, such a beautiful way of living. To know that you are the creator having a human experience, and how you interact with human beings all around you is how you honor the creator. So you don't have to ask people. If you're locking up babies at the border, you don't have to ask them if they love God. If they're willing to take food out of a human being's mouth, if they're willing to allow another human being to suffer, if they're willing to let another human being die simply so that their economy can work, you don't have to ask them if they love God. In their performance, they're demonstrating how they feel towards the Creator.
And that, you know, that brings me, you know, turning back to you, Ali, but you know, it brings me to one, another one of questions, and I hope we have enough time as we go on to, you know, raise some other things. But one thing that I guess I kind of noticed when we talk about African spirituality, and you gave example being in Mexico as far as and in others where you say Eurasians, Europeans make God and spirituality something that you look at, something that you point to, something that you aspire to get to, where, and I wanted to get your thoughts about this, African spirituality was intertwined in the social, cultural value practice. So it wasn't something that was outside of yourself. We were interacting, and that's what made us divine, not as individuals, but as a people, which raises the question, is there two separate sets of values here? One where, and I think I've heard you do a presentation where you brought out about, say, the characterization of ICE, individualistic, you know, competitive and ego-driven compared to being communal, cooperative, and collective. Was African social structure in your mind intentionally made to reinforce the spirituality understanding in the social relationship?
It is almost as if you could not even separate them. It was almost as if you did not have to say it. It was never taught to you. It was a life system that was intrinsic and extrinsic in your experience in your life. You couldn't separate the two. Nobody went to church. You were the church. The original temple is not a building. That's another thing I got in trouble for when I was growing up in a Catholic church, because everybody genuflecting and crossing themselves when they're leaving the church. And I used to ask the nuns and the priests, I say, you said this is the house of God. Okay, but now when I leave, do I leave God behind? Doesn't God come with me? So it's like, do I have to say goodbye to God when I leave the church? Because I ain't going to see him until I come back in here. I've learned, of course, that, hey, listen, it's a money-making venture there, you know. You go to church, you give money to the church. So they want you to go to the church. So the psychology of the Western systems is, yeah, you got to come back here. You got to put that quarter or your dollar or your $5 to light that candle for a prayer that I know for a fact we can't answer, but we appreciate your money. And so it becomes important for us to understand spirit. You are the temple. Your body is the temple of the Creator. Your body was the temple created in order to nurture the involutionary spirit of who you are, in order for you to be able to achieve the divine purpose why you have been placed on this planet. Each and every one of us has a divine reason why we're here. It is unique from everybody else. That's our soul. It's unique from everybody else. I am not Brother Elliot. Brother Elliot is not Brother Richard, and Brother Richard is not Kaba. You are unique in yourself. But your car, your spirit, and my spirit is one. Your soul is the individual that comes forward animated by the spirit. So that when we get to a certain point, you can't separate this. You can't. And to Africans, they can't understand. That's why I call it a sacred science. That's why they called it a spiritual science. Black folk, when they really get down to it, even though they may not claim this, black folk don't believe in God. Black folk don't have faith in God. Because black folk know you can stop believing and you can lose your faith. Black folk know God. That's what got us through the plantation experience. That's what has gotten us through all of the different hellish conditions black folk find themselves in the world today. We know God. Our problem is we don't know God from an African perspective. See, I don't have a problem with any of the holy books. Spirituality Before Religions was meant to analyze the text of Africa, in particular, Kemet or Egypt, in order to lay out an understanding that I can show you where the books of Moses, I can show you where Genesis is on the walls of Egypt. I can show you where Roman Catholicism came from on the papyri of the coffin text. I can show you where the surahs of the Quran in Islam came from by the writings of the Kushites. I can show you that. I can show you Buddha. I can show you Rosicrucianism. I can show you Zoroastrianism. I can show you every religion's scripture in Africa. The problem is, like I tell people, don't throw the book away. I don't have a problem with your book. I have a problem with your interpretation. And if you look at the world through a European eyes, as it relates to, if somebody can get you to turn away from your concept of the Creator and embrace their concept of the Creator, they don't have to enslave you physically. They enslaved your spirit. And where your, and how your spirit goes, your body and mind goes with it. And they, the system that would wish to oppress us, is deathly afraid of us awakening. Because when we awaken, it's over. I'll tell you that now. When black Christians embrace the Africanness of Christianity and understand what Christianity really is, when Hebrews and Muslims understand the Africanness of their spiritual system, it's over. You don't have to say, I don't want to be a slave no more. You ain't a slave no more. That is what Buchmann told those groups of people of IT. He said, cast aside your image of that white god and embrace your African spirit. You are free. He didn't say you would be free. You will be free. You could be free. You can be free. He said you are free. When you cast aside the image of the white god, because it would only make sense that if your god is white, white folk you deal with is white too.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with author, educator, master teacher, Dr. Kaba Khemeini. And you can join the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We got some callers on hold, and when we come back, we'll get to them. Talk to you soon.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215
215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. With this new sense of dignity and this new sense of self-respect, a new Negro came into being with a new determination to suffer, to struggle, to sacrifice, and even to die if necessary in order to be free.
Hang on to the world as it spins around.
All our people. Righteous by nature, wicked by circumstance, so we are going to try to save our people. Take control of our communities. Anybody that wants justice, come out of those parties that won't give you justice, and let's have a justice party and set up our own candidates, run them in the cities. Take down the weak, blood suckers of the poor, and cast them out, and set up people that will fight for justice for us.
Because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world. There's a whole lot of illusions about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these belief systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And there's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said, there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion, was meant to dominate and to control. The Alps had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive, you let people redress something that you invented, sell it back to you, and enslave you through it?
If we are to defeat the European, if we are to master this earth and take back this earth from the European, then we must outthink the European. We must then be creative. That puts the learning emphasis on the how-ness, the how to think as such, and to the use of knowledge as a tool of mastery. So it's a very different kind of thing. As a result, you see, of the control and the paternalism of Europeans over black people, you see the other thing that we must recognize, even if the European becomes good and nice and accepts us and so forth, the fact that he would still be in control creates a what we might call a benevolent paternalism, which still to a great degree helps to maintain this passive mode of thinking and this passive mode of knowledge.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:15 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're joined in conversation this evening with author, educator, master teacher, Dr. Kaba Khemeini, also known in some circles as Booker T. Coleman from the Hidden Colors Collection. We're discussing tonight his book, Spirituality Before Religions and Related Topics. You can get involved in the conversation always by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. And we've got several callers on board. Before we go to our callers, Dr. Khemeini, question for you, and I wanted your comments, and then I'm going to go to some of these callers. Before we went to break, you talked about that Europeans and some of these other nations are afraid of African people or the African mind or our people waking up. I just played clips there, and one of them, Dr. John Henry Clark talked about the use of religion for fear and control. You still there, Dr. Cobb?
Oh, I'm here.
Okay, good. Now, let me deal with and I took a page out of your book, the science of it, because I went and pulled this up from a psychology manual. Some of the leading psychologists is on this manual, putting their understanding in relation to fear and violence. And the reason I'm saying this is because we know from historic experience that the European is the most violent people on the face of this earth. That's not a racist statement. That's not a slur or an aspersion. That's a historical fact. But let's look at what is stated about fear in relation to religion. And I want you to expound on it, and I'm going to go to these callers. Look at it in the psychology manual. And this is what it says about fear. It says, fear is activated when neurological pathways shortcut by passing the neural cortex and activating the
amygdala.
The amygdala, I'm sorry, in the brain, making our behavior impulsive. We are much more likely to act in violence. Violent people are terrified. If we are to become a less violent society, we need to address the fear behind the violence. Now, this is Europeans saying this. Now, if we understand through history that Europeans are the most violent people on the face of this earth through thousands of years, almost from their experience coming out of Europe, then asking you this question before we go to the callers, Dr. Kaba, what's the source of this fear that's causing this violence? Because from what Europeans are stating, violence is only a manifestation of fear. What are they afraid of? What's the fear?
Well, here's where I'd like to go back to.
Go ahead.
The enemy of the human family, a family that has been given three very special gifts, intellect, reason, and language. Those three gifts are there. But the greatest enemy to the human family is ignorance. Ignorance gives birth to twins. Fear, that I use as an acronym, false evidence appearing real. The other twin is denial, which smacks of being psychopathic or sociopathic. Psychopathic is when you know you're doing wrong, but you're going to do it anyway. And sociopathic is when you do it and you don't have a sense of what's right and what's wrong. What is the root of their feeling? That's why I used to always tell the children. Europeans don't hate you. Asians don't hate you. They fear you. And the reason why I did that was because psychologically, if you tell a child, I'm talking about a child's mind, if someone hates you, what you question is, what did I do to make them hate me? But if somebody fear you, the question in your mind is, who am I that they would fear me? It's two different places to come from as it relates to your view of yourself. On one, you are defensive, which is, they hate me. Why do they hate me? What did I do that they make me hate me? As opposed to being proactive. Because when they fear you, you are something or somebody that poses a threat to their well-being. And when we understand this, we can deal with this. Now, what made this happen? To me, my research, the Ice Age. You are only as great as your environment. Many times, your creator is reflected through your environment. So think of an African in a tropical climate who is well-fed. Nature supplies you. In fact, even if you don't know the mango is ready, the mango will fall out the tree when it's ripe and hit you in your head to say, it's time to eat me. But think of the ice. Think of being in conditions that the temperature dipped as far as sometimes 420 odd degrees below zero. Now, you know how we feel when it's 30 degrees above zero. Imagine what the human must have felt in that climate. Their God became an angry, jealous God. Why? They have a proverb in Europe. If your best friend is chasing the pig, don't compete with your friend to get the pig. Wait till your friend catches the pig and then eat them both. That's the mentality that they have. Look at what's happening today. Look at what they're saying. We can't let the economy go. If my mama die, or she just gotta die. She gonna die anyway, so she might as well die now. This is how they feel about their own mother. This is the way they were in the ice. See, this is one of the, what I consider to be a spiritual manifestation for me, observing what's happening during this pandemic. It started when they elected number 45 in the first place. But what I saw in him and what he enlivened in all of those people that support him is an Ice Age mentality. It's an ice man's inheritance. These are some cold-blooded people that have no qualms about selling their mother, their father, their child for them. So when you talk about fear and hatred, all of those are situations that came out of thousands of years of being in an ice age, the Worm II ice age in particular. There is a Dutch physicist, his name is Ohns, O-H-N-N-E-S, Ohns. You can Google his name. He did studies on the impact that cold has on living organisms. And he said right about the temperature of 400 degrees below zero, your brain freezes and your skin gets frost, I mean, just cracks. The development of the African in the Ice Age, while it was a blessing that the nature allowed him and her to survive, it was also a blessing and a curse, because they received what is known as calcified pineal gland. A pineal gland is a very important gland in your limbic system of the brain. In fact, you have three very important glands. You have the pineal gland, you have the pituitary gland, and you have the optic thalamus. They're all located in your third ventricle. Now, I'm giving you all this just to let you know you can research this. You can go with this on your own to be able to understand this on your own. But it's time for an awakening. And so I'm going to drop the science so that you can understand this is not just about spirituality. This is about science. This is about knowing God. This is about you knowing that you are God, having a human experience. The pineal gland is responsible for your spiritual growth. Your pituitary gland is responsible for your physical growth. And your optic thalami is responsible for your mental growth. The pineal gland is considered to be a master gland. It secretes melatonin and serotonin throughout the body. It secretes melatonin in the absence of the sun, and it secretes serotonin in the presence of the sun. When Africans went in and were caught in the ice age, something occurred for their pineal gland, which is the seat. It's known as the vault of initiation, where these three glands are located. Something happened to their pineal gland. And here's the analogy I'd like to give you. If you took a plump, juicy grape and put it out in the sun would absorb the liquid naturally, and that grape would become a raisin. Raisins are sun-dried grapes. The pineal gland is called pineal because it's shaped like a cone, like a pine cone sort of shape. In fact, if you go to the Vatican, he's got one sitting right on top of a statue. And everybody misses what that's actually saying. But that's a whole nother story down the road. And they got it from Africa, too. So that's another story altogether. But the idea is that imagine taking this pineal gland that is so special to spiritual development. And imagine putting it in an environment of frost, of ice, of hundreds of degrees below zero temperature over long periods of time. The pineal gland became freeze-dried. Like the raisin is sun-dried grapes, the calcified pineal gland is a freeze-dried, healthy, plump, liquid gland that secretes liquids in the brain. And if you want to know the evidence of the difference, look at how they sing. Look at how they dance. American Bandstand could never stand against Soul Train. I don't care how many of their singers they have. Their very best is our basic mediocre. That's just the way it is. And that's why I say, as it relates to what we can achieve if we were to be able to educate our own children and educate our own community, we'd be able to do an education what Michael Jordan did in basketball, what the Williams sisters did in tennis, what Tiger Woods did, yeah, cavalation and all, what Tiger Woods did in golf. We'd be able to change education to the point that that's why they're saturating their own people in the educational system, because they know that when I was in education, we was doing stuff with the children. There were things that children contact me today that were my kindergarten children, and they say, I remember when you were telling us this in reference to Hidden Colors. I did not say anything in Hidden Colors that I did not tell my kindergarten class in 1985. And so this is where we are, family. We either going to wake up or we going to stay asleep. And if you wake up, you got to do something. See, being woke isn't just being aware. It's about doing something about what you know.
Let me grab a couple of these calls. Let's go to 404. 404 is first. 404.
Hey, peace and blessing, Elliot, Richard, and Doctor. Hey, Doctor, man, you right on the money, man. That's what I've been trying to tell people to wake up, to rebuild the temple, man. Okay? Mm. I tell them, you want to see God, look in the mirror, man. And check this out, Doc. Once I saw this video, y'all can see it too. What happens when the sperm hit the egg, Doc? You can see that sparkling light, and then you can hear the clap of thunder. Okay? So that just proved to me that we are light and sound energy, man. And so once I discovered that, Doc, then I started doing what Mr. Dick Gregory say, okay? Start using my mind where I can be in light and be in sound. For instance, if anybody do harm to me, I tell myself, if this person attempt to do harm to me, I will reflect that whatever energy they coming at me to reflect on them. That's the law of the universe, Doc. See what I'm saying? And then I try to tell our people how does the universe work, man. Whatever you say, good or bad, it will happen. Thought, word, energy. And so that's why I try to tell my black people, don't be saying nothing bad about black people because it happens. So I put out positive energy, man. I'm trying to rebuild a temple. I don't want to get together with nobody that's vibrating lower with me, man. I'm trying to rise up to your level, Doc, rebuilding the temple, man. That's why I love Elliot and the Black Talk Radio Network, man. Okay, it's all we got, the Europeans, like you say, they scared of us, man. They scared of once we learn how to bend light and sound with our thought and word action. And you tell them devils, whatever y'all try to do to me, it will reflect on you and it will happen to you before it happened to me. You throw a rock now and throw it at me, that rock will turn it right back at you. And it's simple, Doc. Once we learn how to do that, man, that would be what Mr. Dick Gregg was saying. Okay, for instance, Doc, I was on the Carl Nelson show. I called in when that hurricane was getting ready to hit Florida last year. I had all the listeners that know how to do this. Say we would turn that storm. And you know what happened, Doc? We turned that storm. But we didn't make it go out to sea like we should have done. We just said turn it, and the turn it hit the Bahamas. And that's on us. So I was just learning how. We got the power over them, man. That's why I don't even worry about them, man. I go around them. They run for me, Doc. Okay? See, once we know how to bust our energy up, then you ain't got to worry about them coming at you no more, man. So I just want to throw that out there for the family and peace and blessings. It's our time. And Elliot, put me on hold, man. Put me on mute so I can hear.
Thank you for your call.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes, it's a pleasure, gentlemen. You have an excellent guest, Dr. Carver. And I'll say this to you, sir. I liked how you opened up with Dr. Hansberry, who was the uncle of Lorraine Hansberry. When Du Bois came across Dr. Leo Hansberry, he pushed the needle for Du Bois to do
a lot more in history. People knew because when Du Bois was at Harvard and did his dissertation on the suppression of the African slave trade, he really wanted to write about the Great Kingdoms because Harvard wouldn't let him get to that point, so he stopped there. I like what you said when it comes to a person like Dr. Clark, because it was Farrakhan and Malcolm X was told by Elijah Muhammad to study under Dr. Clark. But I also like what you're saying because a lot of people are talking about the Ice Age of the European, also a glacier period. Both of those periods had a lot to do with their insanity. And their insanities, of course, in their mind, the preservation of their race means more to them than anything. Because they feel as though if they were to make with their germ a darker germ to their recessive germ, that they wouldn't longer be around. They know that amongst themselves more than we think about it. So when Elijah Muhammad talked about Yaku and he said the scientists will bear me witness, he was talking about what you're talking about, doctor. He was talking about what Diop's work was. He was talking about even the writers like David Walker's Appeal. He was telling you that in his own language, on an elementary level, to go on the level that you are to get us to the point that we're at, we have to realize there's an enemy amongst us. And how they were able to do what they did was we let them come amongst us, not realizing their goal. Any comments?
Dr. Cowan?
Well, what you're saying is absolutely correct. And the fact of the matter is that when you look at the work of scholars such as Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, who talks about genetic annihilation, and when she talks about various aspects of the world that we're living in, it becomes so obvious. When you put those pieces in place to understand what has happened and what they're doing, it changes. And to go back to what the brother said before, in reference to you don't have to worry about what they do because, you know, I tell people I'm like rubber, you like glue. Whatever you throw at me, bounce off of me, but it's going to stick to you. That is the Maatian law of reciprocity, which means that what goes around comes around. You shall reap what you sow. That's not a spiritual proverb. That's science. That's the law of physics. What you throw out, you will get back. The law of attraction is balanced by the law of repulsion. It's a science. And as an African people, we got to focus on who we are as a people. We've got to do this. Dr. Clark has another presentation that he talks about. He says, you don't have any friends. You see, I think we got to find out the difference. We are a very powerfully sensitive people. What built the pyramids also put us on the plantation. We are a very powerfully sensitive people. And it is by nature of our axiology, according to Dr. Edwin Nichols, that we are a people to people. That's how we build our societies, people to people. We understand that the culture, the nation, and the civilization is built by the interrelationship of people to people. The Asian model is people to group. Because of their exposure in the ice, the individual depended on the group to survive. See, in Africa, you didn't have to worry about the group to survive. You could just walk outside your door and there'd be mangoes and nuts and fruits and vegetables. But in the ice, you didn't have that. And so you had to develop a life system that was very angry and jealous and greedy. Possessive.
So true, doctor.
And so,
true. I'm listening. Keep going.
And so the last is the European. His relationship or hers is from the person to the material wealth. That's how their axiology works. Africans are people to people. Asians are people to group. And Europeans are people to material possession. This is what they live by.
I have a question, doctor. So when will this smokeless fire burn itself out? Or can somebody put it out?
Well, I have a webinar series. It's a four-part webinar series on a documentary I was in titled Race War. And I felt that the research I had done was so exhaustive that I just wanted to share more information. So I did a four-part webinar. Here's what we all have to look at. Europeans were born by accident, but they're going to die out on purpose. Here's what I mean by that. Some of the things that I dealt with in the webinar was this. First of all, there is a powerful rate of Europeans, non-pigmented people, dying of skin cancer, melanoma. Their depigmented skin in the presence of the sun is causing a disease that is skin cancer. We don't know this because we're melanated people. So when we go to the doctor for our annual checkup or whatever it is, they don't do to us what they do to less pigmented people. When Europeans go to the doctor, they got to get naked. And that doctor goes over their body from head top to shoe stop, searching for melanomas. Black folk, they don't do that to black folk, because the only place that we really can get melanoma, although we can die of skin cancer, I don't speak in absolutes, but we get it in the palm of our hands and the soles of our feet, because those are the two places where we really don't have a large concentration of melanin. So that they're dying in large numbers of melanoma. See, they weren't meant to be here. The first thing they should have done was to get back on the track of the archetype of humanity by mating with the original people who were black. But again, like we said, they decided that they were going to only mate with themselves out of fear of their genetic annihilation. But what they didn't realize is that as they mated with themselves, they moved themselves further and further off the archetype of the human family. We're talking science here. There's another problem
They're grafted. They're grafted. Mutations. Graftations. They're grafted.
The other piece to it, brother, is the fact that they have, well, let me tell you what happens in a melanated body. In a melanated male body, melanin in the reproductive organ, the gonads, the testicles of a man, creates an electrical reaction, an electrical current in the microtubules, or what's known as the spermatozoa, the tail of the spermatozoa, that allows the sperm to travel to the egg. There's a lot of activity, because once a man ejaculates in a woman, once that woman stands up, that sperm is working against gravity.
Right.
So it has to have an electricity to find its way to the egg, because that's why it's in the woman's body.
Right.
In a melanated female's body, melanin creates a magnetic current in a female's body, so that when a man and a woman mate, which is God, because when a man is within a woman, two people become one. They become connected, and that is the creator. But when a melanated man and a melanated woman have a physical relationship, the electricity in the man and the magnetism in a woman creates a cosmic reality known as electromagnetism. The baby is conceived. In a less melanated person, there is a problem, because in a less melanated European woman, there is a lack of magnetism in the egg, and in the European male, there's a lack of electricity in the microtubules, or the tail of the spermatozoa. That is why they are impotent and sterile. And that's why you see all these commercials about them trying to keep it up. Because if your gun is low, you ain't gonna fire. And so,
so
for them to even
They're a live grafted germ. They're a live grafted germ.
All right, we're going to move on. Thanks for your call. Talk to you soon.
Well, you know, and if I can just say this, you know, because we all talking about the pandemic here. Listen, we've been dealing with a virus for 400 years. Called white supremacy, based out of white fragility. You talk about a pandemic. We've been in a pandemic ever since we've been in America and Europeans came over here. If anyone knows how to deal with this pandemic, we do. This may be a biological virus, but we've been around a human virus for 400 years and even more than that. So we have to understand. We know what we have to do. We just got to do it.
Oh, wow. Let's go to 647. 647? 647, are you there? 647? Let's put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elias and Brother Richard. And good evening to your guest, Brother Doctor. You know, Doctor, man, I'm telling you, you're hitting all cylinders, man. You know, you got to get this guest on again, my brother, because he's a scientist, you see? He's a scientist. You don't put this white man under the microscope and dissect him. You see what I'm saying? And the brother is so right. That psychology, that religion that they use on us, you know, white Jesus, and it's prevalent in Africa, it's prevalent in the islands, that psychology, and the Islamists too. The Islamists with their psychology too in Africa, have black folks killing each other in the name of Islam, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, and now they have Chinese now coming in, they have Confucius schools now in the universities. So everybody is trying to capture our minds. But brother, you are fresh off breath here. Thank you, good brother. Keep on keeping on.
Yes, sir. Yah Rastafari.
Thank you.
I appreciate. And, you know, the key is we must open our eyes to understand. We have to understand what it is that we're experiencing. And when I wrote the book, Spirituality Before Religion, it's on Amazon. That's the best way to get it now if you're interested, is to go to Amazon. When I wrote the book, I wanted to share what I had learned in my own personal journey for the search. And one of the things that we talk about as it relates to Egypt, which we call Kemet, the black land, is we don't realize that the reason why we call it Egypt is because that is the first place that most Europeans came in contact with Africa, coming from the east. But the reality of it is that it's we call the first kingdom of Egypt the Old Kingdom. But the reality is that the Old Kingdom is a Kushite kingdom. These were Africans that traveled from the south, from Kustal and from Edfu, and traveled up. So in the book, I have a chapter on the Kushites to understand that the writings on the walls of Kemet, or Egypt, on the coffins of the coffin text, the papyri of the Book of the Coming Forth Today by Night, all of them were written in a continued, unbroken, dynastic history of African people. And we have to stop thinking of the Old Kingdom as separate, or the first dynasty. It's not the first dynasty. It's just a continuation of African dynasties that were traveling from the south to the north. We have to understand the kingdoms and what they represented and what was going on during the Old Kingdom of Kemet, the Middle Kingdom, the New Kingdom. What was going on during this time that made what happened happen? What was it that happened? So we have to understand the New Kingdom. We have to understand the Napatan, or what's called the 25th Dynasty. We have to understand this. There's no way for us to understand our history if we don't understand the realities of the Africanness of what it is that we're talking about. And it's only after I take you through the dynasties that you could even understand the text, whether it be the Memphite text, the pyramid text of the Old Kingdom, the coffin text of the Middle Kingdom, the Book of the Coming Forth Today by Night, misnomered the Book of the Dead. What was the judgment scene? What are the 12 hours of the Amduat, the judgment of the human soul? And in the pyramid text, just to give you an example of what I'm talking about, there are over 800 utterances. They didn't call them scripture. Scripture gives you the sense of writing. And although they were written and carved, they were called utterances because they believed that it was all the word of the Creator coming forward that happened to be carved on the wall. But still, word comes in three forms: in your thoughts, in what you speak, and what you do. Your thoughts are silent words. Your vocal words are vocalized words, and your deeds are action words, but all come out of the word. In utterance 273 and 274, they carve on the wall a story about the divine human who turns into the bull, which is a sign of fertility and birth. And the bull, in his ferocity, eats the gods and drinks the blood of the gods. But in eating and drinking the god, in eating the body of the gods and eating and drinking the blood of the gods, they didn't mean it literally. What they meant in the metaphor was that that which you ingest, you become. You know, we have a proverb, you are what you eat. So the idea was, from the African perspective, is that if you ate of the divine, you became divine. But what Europeans did is they couldn't catch that story. So what they actually did was told a story about a man. They took that divine human carved on the walls of the Nesetbiti or the Pharaoh Unas. They took that metaphor and they made it literal and called the man Jesus Christ at a time that the letter J didn't even exist in the language. They couldn't have been called Jews. There could not have been a Judas, and his name couldn't have been Jesus. That's why when you look above a Roman cross, a crucifix, you'll see the word I-N-R-I, which means Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. But why were the two letters that represented the J, I of Jesus and the I of the Jews, why didn't they use the letter J? Because the letter J didn't exist until the 1500s in modern times. There was no J in the alphabet at this time. So the illusion is so phenomenal, but the story is beautiful. Because what they were saying is that in life, if you ingest divine things, you will live a divine life. And if you live a divine life, you will know how to ingest the gods when you die. And when you ingest the divine, you will then sit at the right hand of Asar, the creator god. You will sit at his right side with Aset and Nebetet, two females. Because here's another thing, family. God cannot just be a man. To have a god, Dr. Ben told us, in order to have a god, you must have a god. So the idea of a masculine God only, and the story of Adam and Eve, where you gonna put the male asleep and take his rib and create a woman? You believe that? Listen, I have a problem. That's a fairy tale. And for you to believe that, and you're supposed to be into, I'm not saying you as you. I'm saying there's doctors, lawyers, PhDs that believe this. How could you believe a story like this when everybody on the planet that we know of, animal or human animal, come forward through a woman? I'm sorry, family. I got a problem with these stories. And like, I can't handle these stories. Because these are fairy tales, man. That's like Jack and the Beanstalk and Cinderella and Little Red Riding Hood. I know there are some folk that may be a little concerned about what I'm saying. But I'm sorry, I can't get with that. I can't get with that. Not as an African that understands spirituality.
Okay.
And the beauty of the story. It's a beautiful story of resurrection. It's a beautiful story of judgment. It's a beautiful story of being accountable for the life that you live. It's a beautiful story, but it's been contaminated by a contaminated, ice-frozen mind.
Let's go back again. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
I just want to say one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have the utmost respect for Christianity because at a time when we were on the plantation, we needed a story to get us where we needed to go. We needed to be able to shake loose this pain that we felt. We needed something, and that story of Jesus the Christ solved our problems and met our needs. And so I understand the need to hold on to a religion. But I must tell our family this, to continue to believe, as my brother Jeremiah Kamara told me, he said, for you to continue to follow a spiritual system that no longer solves your problems and meets your needs is like carrying the boat on your back after you cross the river. It got us across the waters of enslavement. But once you get into the dock, leave it there. Because if you keep carrying it on your back, it becomes a burden. And it stops you from being your best person.
Let's go back again to 647. Maybe they hit the 647.
Yes, can you hear me now?
I hear you.
Oh, beautiful. A great show. I have a couple of questions. One I wanted to know is, are there any African religions that are proselytizing Christianity, Islam, and many other religions proselytize? Are there any African religions that proselytize? And could you talk about the whole concept of one God versus the concept of multiple gods?
Well, you know, to the African, there was only one God. And they understood it. And everything that came out of it were manifestations of that one force, both male and female. In nature, polytheism, what the Romans did. Romans were polytheistic. Africans didn't worship animals, they didn't worship trees, but they respected nature. So if they needed a tree, let's say, to build a home, and they cut down a tree, they would have a ceremony paying homage to nature. And they would plant another tree in place of the tree that they were taking because they understood the reciprocity of life. It makes a lot of sense when you think about it scientifically. But if you are taking the interpretations of Europeans and they are attempting to denigrate your spiritual system, then you will see it as what they call animism. Where you're praying to rocks and trees. They didn't pray to rocks and trees. They prayed to the nature that brought forward the rock and the tree. And to ask that if I should...
Do you see animism is necessarily a negative... I'm saying that in the Yoruba religion, I'm sorry for cutting you, but in the Yoruba religion, don't you have like Shango and the god for iron, the god for this, the god for that, and... Is there anything wrong with that?
No, there's nothing wrong with that at all. In fact, there's a book by Dr. J. Lucas Olumide, who wrote the book, The Religion of the Yoruba. He traces the Orishas back to Kush.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So that it's important to understand it's your perspective. If you honor nature, if you respect nature, if you respect all the things that nature has created, the earth, the air, the water. If you respect that, then you will live according to that. You see, I'm hearing people talking about we're at war with nature right now with this virus. Let me tell you something. My arm is too short to box with nature. Everybody talking about they're going to get this vaccine and they'll be able to go back. No. Nature is going to tell you when you can come back outside your room. Ain't no vaccine going to help you. There's nothing that's going to help you except nature. There are certain things that we'll do. This too shall pass. But these folk think that they greater than nature. They have this thing where they're going to defy nature. You better think twice before you think you're going to defy nature. Nature can't be defied. And so in our tradition, we honor and respect. So all of these orishas and be it Santeria, Candomblé of Brazil, or Voodoo of Haiti and St. Lucia, Obia in the English-speaking Caribbean, the African-American Baptist Church, it's all African. And as long as you understand it and as long as you celebrate it and you be one with nature and you pay homage to nature, and every night I ask and every day I say to nature, please allow the angel of death to pass by my house. And to do that, I put the blood of my ancestors on the door. And by that, I mean, I don't mean their blood. I mean their experience that they've been through. Let the angel of death pass by this house. Let us understand the forces of nature. This virus ain't nothing but a reflection of the way this society has been acting for the past 400 years. And we better understand that.
And the other part of the question of the non-proselytizing religion question in terms of Africans have is African religion a non-proselytizing religions, and is that a negative or positive or neither?
Well, it's called who you're dealing with. It's negative and it's positive. It's positive because however you view your life, you express your creator through your actions and through your words and through your deeds. And so that was one of our problems, is because when they came amongst us, people of Eurasian descent, we thought they were the same way. But they was up there telling you that if you don't believe in what I believe in, I'm going to kill you. There's a big difference. You know, Africans don't have to proselytize because when they got it going on, look, when you got something going on and it makes sense and it's vibing with people, you don't have to put a gun to someone's head to believe you or to accept you. They'll accept it simply because they know you got it going on.
Yeah, they'll gravitate to it. Yeah.
They'll gravitate to it. That's why I say you got to understand the laws of attraction and repulsion, because that's what's happening with our children today. They are repulsed by what they see. They are repulsed by understanding that this ain't nothing but a hustle. All you interested in is making money off of me. Talking about, give me money and I'll be able to talk to the creator on your behalf. And you don't even realize, you don't even need anyone that will do it for free. You could do it yourself. And that's what the book Spirituality is meant to do. It is meant to open you up to understand you are the original temple of man. And wound man. And it is within you that housed all of the orishas, all of the neteru, all of those forces of nature are in you. Our ancestors are calling out to us. Every time we do libation, there is a thunderous voice that one of us calls on us. Our ancestors want to help us. Our parents is like a parent and a child. A loving parent wants to help the child. The ancestors want to help us. They are our eyes that do not see, our nose that does not smell, our ears that do not hear, our skin that does not touch, and our tongue that does not taste. We are the opposite of that. We are the eyes that see, the nose that smells, the mouth that tastes, the skin that feels. Together, we cover both the spiritual and the scientific world. And that's why spirituality existed before religions. Spirituality is the parent. religions are the children. I'm not saying that they're bad, but I'm saying some of them are misbehaving. And we got to know the difference between an organization that solves your problems and meets your needs, one that doesn't. Because I don't know about you, but I left my boat on the dock. Because I'm not carrying that burden with me.
I agree with you, sir.
Thank you.
And
for
the last part of the question is, Leo Hansberry was, you said that's Lorraine Hansberry's, he was her uncle, right?
Yes, Lorraine Hansberry's Carl was her father. Carl was William Leo Hansberry's brother.
Was Carl the brother that went to Mexico because he was so disillusioned with racism in America? I think he died in Mexico. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. That I'm not too sure of.
Yeah, because he was into politics and believed in the American way for my understanding for so long, and he became so disillusioned that he went to Mexico, and I think he passed away down there. And Lorraine Hansberry was in New York. I think she had to go to his funeral in Mexico. But he was a believer in America for a long time. And I guess he was a great business person, I understand. And
yeah, he was. He was very good into business. That right. I know.
Right.
Very much into real estate and things like
that. Exactly. Yeah. Right. And how can I get your book? You said go through Amazon, the book on Lorraine Hansberry?
Yes, Leo, Amazon. Well, William Leo Hansberry is up on my site. My name, Kaba Hiawatha Kamene. And my first book on Professor Hansberry is up there. And my second book, which is Spirituality Before Religions, which is this evening. And also, I'd like to encourage you to consider going to my website, www.kabakamene.com.
I will go on it, definitely, sir.
Because I have a free e-course and my study guide. A free study guide, 44 pages. I have that on my website, kabakamene.com. And also, you can go to SBR webinar number 1.com, because I've started a 12-part webinar that's really going deep inside of spirituality before religion. And you can go to SBR webinar number 1.com, and you can download the webinar. But this is coming in stages. The first stage was my e-course. The second stage was writing the book. The third stage was the webinar series. We're going to have it the last Sunday of every month. And then we have a question and answer period the first Sunday of the month, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 o'clock Pacific Time. And then we have bonus offers that give you more materials. Family, we really have to study this. We really have to roll back our sleeves. It is a time for awakening. And I think that we all have a wake-up call. I think that what we're going through now is a very strong and very obvious wake-up call. We all have got to roll back our sleeves, and we have to do better for our children.
Yes.
Every African civilization was based on whatever the society was doing between the adults of 20 years of age and 65 years of age and older as the elders. Everything was geared towards making the children better than them. My children, I don't want them to be as good as me. I want them to be better than me. Every successful society is geared towards making the children elevate and ascend beyond where that civilization is at that time of space. And it's important. Our children deserve the best. We need a 20-year plan, not just what we're going to do right now, but what are we going to do right now that will enhance 20 years from now? We've got to get busy, family. We've got to stop talking. We have to start doing. And we all must do it in our own way. Whatever your gift is, that's your contribution to moving us forward, whatever it may be. And even if two people do the same thing, your gift is unique to you. You're going to do it different than the other person. Makes no difference what it is. That's what makes you who you are. That's what gives you your soul power. And
thank
spirituality before religion. You're welcome, brother. Thank you for the conversation, because these are things that we have to talk about. These are things that we have to move through. Spirituality Before Religions is up on Amazon. So is my book on Professor William Leo Hansberry. Like I say, if you're into black studies, if you're into African studies, he was the architect of the African studies program.
Thank you for your contribution.
Thank you very much.
All right. Talk to you soon. Let's go to 334. Let's take a few more before we start winding down. 334.
Thank you, Brother Elliot, for taking my call, and good evening, Brother Kamene. I have a question regarding atheism or agnostic beliefs or non-beliefs. Can we talk about, from an African perspective, atheism and agnostic, or atheist agnostics, if that's such a belief system of sorts?
Okay. The research I've done been exhaustive on this particular subject, particularly because of education. There are two things that happen in education. There are two roles in education. One of them deals with the person that researches information, studies nature, documents it. There is another person that teaches it, or is the practitioner. So the one that does the research gives his or her research to the practitioner to be taught in order to come back and talk about the strength and weaknesses of whatever it is, and they refine and revise their information. The person in Africa, Seba, okay, there were names for the ones that do the research and the ones that practice it as temple teachers. When the Greeks were introduced to this concept, the researcher was called the theist, or like the theorist, the one that comes up with theories, the one that does the research. The practitioner was called Gnostic, with a G, G-N-O-S-T-I-C, a Gnostic and a theist. T-H-E-I-S-T. The theist was the researcher. The Gnostic was the teacher that practiced it. When the Greeks taught the Romans what they knew, because remember, the Greeks were enslaved by the Romans to teach them what they knew, because the Romans were savages. They were barbarians. They had no nothing. They brought no culture to the game. Neither did the Greeks. But by this time, in the 30 BCs, the Greeks had been around since 332, and they had got enough information to get something going on. The ones that did the research were called the theists. The ones that did the teaching, the practitioners, were called the Gnostics. When the Romans took over the system of education, in order for them to bring the Greek civilization to a hold, to a stop, they could no longer. They were hunted. They were overcome. They were defeated. The final step to this total takeover of the Greek knowledge system that the Greeks got from the Africans, the Romans put an A in front of both of those words and forbid it to be taught. The Romans were the pagans. That's where the word comes from, pagan. So what you have is you have this concept of the what? The theist and the Gnostic. But now with an A in front of those words, what do you have? You have the atheist and you have the agnostic. It was the information that the Greeks got from the Africans. The Romans took it from the Greeks. But here's another example. Listen, here in New York City, well, all over the country, black folk, well, people play the numbers, right? But back in the 70s, when white folks decided that they were going to take over the numbers, what did they do? They changed the name to lottery They made their number games legal, and they made the original number game played in Harlem for decades illegal. So the way they were able to overtake the number system was to make the original illegal. And that's what they did then. The atheist and the agnostic is still the basic spiritual scientific information that's taught, but everybody is afraid to teach it because when you hear the word atheist or agnostic, you think of something horrible because of the Indo-European definition of what an atheist and agnostic is.
Thank you. Thank you.
Does that make sense, brother?
Yes, yes. Thank you so very much for clearing that up.
Thank you for your
It's all the same. You know, Bob Marley, last song on his last album, the brother had it right. All I have is this redemption song. There's only one word. That's why it's called the universe. One word. Universe. And where do you go to school to learn about the universe? You go and you study in a universe city or a university. It's right in front of us. We see
thank
it.
You.
Brother, thank
you're
you for
welcome,
your brother. Thank you for your contribution. Let's go to caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller? Can you hear me? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 267. 267? 267, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away.
You know, there's one thing that...
go ahead.
As I listen to you, Brother Cobb, that, you know, as I, you know, pull our discussion, you know, together in looking at spirituality and some of the questions that brought it up, is that the Africans' spiritual system was their relationship with each other and their understanding of the, what's that, reflecting that relationship through the through how they acted with each other, tying in what you said about Dr. Nichols, the people, right? And our understanding of our relationship to nature. One thing that I pull in the discussion that you, and as you bring out in your book, or, you know, as I hear you bring it out, is that African spirituality is inculcated in our relationship, which is different than having a religion, which is separated from the relationship, the social people-to-people relationship. And I think that that's really, like, important, if I'm correct, because in that, you know, it is no proselytizing, because that relationship, it is uniform between those people. So you can have, as you say, the Twa has its relationship as a people. So their spirituality is tied to that. They don't try to proselytize that to any group that's with may have other group within the relation in within that area. Their understanding of their relationship to the universe, to the environment, to themselves is somewhat like a closed system. So let me ask that as a question. Would you agree with that?
You know, my brother, the only reason why someone proselytizes their faith system is because they don't really believe it. Because if you can get other people to believe it, it helps you believe it a little bit more. I don't need anybody. You know, like I say, there are a lot of people that don't agree with my belief system. And my belief system doesn't require that they do. I believe what I believe. Judge me by my work. Judge me by how I act. Don't judge me by if I go to church on Sunday. Don't judge me by how much money I put in. Don't judge me that I light the $5 candle. Judge me as I relate. As Dr. King said, men are judge, less judge I, first of all. But if I were to, in the human realm of things, if I were to consider people, I would consider them by the content of their character. not by all the isms that create schisms. If you feel good about your life system, if you feel good about your spirituality, you don't have to try to convince someone else to be like you. Lead by example. Let them see you conduct yourself a certain way that they say, I like his style. I like the way she does what she does. I'd like to be like that. But I'd like to be like that my way, not their way. And so I think you're absolutely correct. There is no proselytizing in Africa because they're so busy trying to get caught up in you as a person. They're not trying to convince you to believe what I believe. In fact, there is an excitement at points of departure. Most of the greatest lessons I've ever learned was not when someone agreed with me. It's when someone didn't agree with me. And that's fine. Teach me. I'm not looking for my truth. I'm looking for the truth. And the African basic, and that's what got us in trouble. Because we thought when the European came amongst us that he was like that too. And he wasn't. And he never has been. And he never will be. And we're trying to find a moral compass in an immoral human being. You're not going to get water from a rock. You're not going to get blood from a turnip. And you're not going to get morality from the Indo-European or the Eurasian. And I'm not speaking in absolutes. I know there are phenomenal, wonderful people in all cultures. I know that. I have known some in my lifetime. But as a group, they defy the laws of nature and know not the Creator. And there is a price to be paid for what they have done. The purposeful underdevelopment of a people is going to be charged on them. And they're going to pay a price.
Yes.
And the people that have gone before them, their children and grandchildren and children yet born, will curse them for how they acted. When the world looks back on what they did, see, because this past 400 years is but a blink compared to how long folk have been around. We're going to get up out of this. We got up out of worse. The Indo-European is dying on his own. We don't even have to lift up anything. They're dying on their own. They're out. Impotent, skin cancer, drugs. Drugs is killing them. Opiates are killing them. Meth is killing them. They put all them drugs in our community, figuring, oh, it's just going to stay with the blacks.
Yeah, backfired.
But it backfired
mm-hmm.
because they didn't understand human nature. They didn't understand human nature. You cannot. It does not rain on one man's house.
You know, but, you know, there's one thing that, and I just wanted to bring this up, you know, in this discussion, because I think that I wanted to bring up two quotes I pulled out to show that we as African people in the present, those especially those of us really all, even all over in the diaspora, but in North America particularly, because if, as you say, it's true, our spirituality has been something that's been cultivated, whether you say a million years, 10,000 years, 5,000 years, we've created, cultivated a spiritual a understanding of our spirituality being tied to our social relationship. And even in the last 400 years, we were able to, in our African retention, showed how it worked, that our spirituality worked. And if you don't mind, I just wanted to throw these two quotes out because I think they relate to your point, spirituality or religion. Mumia Abu-Jamal wrote in Faith of Our Fathers, he said, for Black Americans, however, who saw their deliverance from bondage as a divine act, the political was deeply infused with the spiritual. Which says that in that moment, you know, we even being taken on Christianity because of the particular situation we were in, we were utilizing in this here foreign language and this foreign belief system, we were utilizing our people to people relationship that is was cultivated over a long period of time, and utilized the church as a tool for our liberation. And Earl Henderson, in his book, The Revolution Will Not Be Theorized, he said that African-American culture was constituted in part from African culture, was constituted in part from African culture, was in part from African cultural retention, such as found in the Black church, but more directly, it derived from Black folk culture, which has inculcated and the emergence from the slave plantation. So though we took on Christianity, again, because we were in an isolated environment, this plantation system, we never lost our spiritual connection with each other. And because we never lost our spiritual connection with each other, if I'm reading them right and I'm taking what you're saying correctly, we were able to overcome one of the most vicious experiences in as we would characterize in human experience in human history. And as you say, even that is just a short blimp of time. But I think that we have to look at, especially in this moment of Rona or Corona 19, that we have to raise the question. Because we can be dealing with ourselves as individual and have our individual relationship to our spiritual or belief system, or we can deal with, as we have always been known as African people, as human beings, as you say, as first humans, to recognize that the value system, the spiritual system, is our social relationship with each other. And that's not a question about choice, and that's a question about science, because you gave us the understanding that just by dealing with each other, we create an electromagnetic relationship that only we can create with each other because of our melanin, because of how we come into existence, but because we reflect what the universe and nature around us has demonstrated. That's the only way we can be able to deal with our particular challenge in this moment. But if we make the choice that we have individual choices, which is the value system of the Eurasian, and you give the history of the Romans, the Greeks, the Asians, if we utilize their value system or their relationship to each other, then we're talking about our own annihilation, even if we take on individually African practices. Does that make sense?
My brother, that's exactly what we're watching happen. What you've just described is what's actually happening. And that's why, you know, I said that the name of your program is so appropriate, you know, A Time for Awakening. And this is what we're experiencing. Dr. Shekhar Diop tells us there are three things people take from you when they wish to oppress you. They take your history, they take your language, they take your psychological factor that Dr. Leonard Jeffries calls your values, your interests, and your principles. After they take your history, your language, and your psychological factor, your cultural common sense, they then superimpose their history, their language, and their psychological factors, values, interests, and principles on you. So, if that be true, how could your decision or what you choose to do and any choices you have in your life be in your favor when the choices you are making are coming through the eyes of those who wish to oppress you?
There you go.
You have to think differently. You have to think differently, but you got to think universal. There are universal principles on the earth, in the cosmos, that allow you to do what has to be done. And if you continue to identify with those forces that have oppressed you, How else can you be but oppressed even when you think you're free? You're still oppressed. You're just a free slave.
Which we have
wow.
had.
Wow.
And that's why Dr.
There it is.
Baba Wade Nobles in Sekou, and he says that our criteria for authenticating the reality of African human process. So it's our responsibility to look at our spirituality and, you know, continue to recognize that what's authentic, you know, other than that, we will be doing just as you said.
There are no God's chosen people. There are only people that chose God. Outer being chose anybody to do anything. It's the inner being that you choose. You choose to be a creative force. But look at the nature of the tropical environment that is so fruitful and constantly in abundance, giving you everything that you need to survive. Of course, there are some dry seasons. I understand that. That's part of nature. But for the most part, in tropical, the animals, the birds, the trees, the fruit, the vegetable, it's the Garden of Eden. Beautiful. It's supportive. It is a loving creator. That's your environment. That's your nature. That's what you see. And you understand this. But when you're in the ice, your God is an angry and jealous God. It's a greedy God. It's a God that will take everything from you. It's a God that will allow you to eat your children when you're hungry. It is a God that will let you kill. Because I don't know if people understand this, but there are a lot of people who are dying that shouldn't have died because of the decisions made by people. This is not just something happening. This is not the virus came. It's here. But the choices people made in dealing with it were absolutely incompetent and imbecilic. But it stemmed from their very nature.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not sorry for what they're doing. So don't think they're sorry for what they're doing. In fact, I believe they thrive on that feeling of causing pain to other people.
Dr. Kava, we kept you over time. You all right? I want to clear up this board. You good?
Oh yeah, I'm fine.
Good.
I'm fine.
Good. Okay, let's go to the next call. Let's go to 215. 215, are you there? Sorry to keep you so long. 215. 215. Let's put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away. Let's go to caller. What's your name? Where you calling from? Let's put them on hold. Let's go to another 215. 215?
Brother Elliot?
Yes, sir.
How you doing, Elliot?
Great.
Hey, Brother Richard. How Dr. Callie? How you doing, my brother?
Excellent, brother. How you?
I'm doing fine. I'll praise be to Allah. You know, Dr. Callie, you know,
Kaba.
You said so many good things tonight, brother, that just resonated with me because I'll take it step by step. When you earlier during the show, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Dr. Khaled. Dr. Kaba and stuff. I just want to say a lot of things, like I said, you said tonight resonated with me because you were saying earlier, I think during the first hour, maybe the second hour of the show, you said about how these Europeans are cold-blooded people. And you said, why they may be individuals of them, like you said, that are good people, but you said as a group, they are definitely immoral, or in some cases, they lack morals. They amoral. And that is so true because I've told Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on many occasions, and I've said this on terrestrial radio here in Philadelphia, these people are so wicked and stuff. And see, I only think our people even realize the depths of how evil they can be because these are the people that can be down in Langley, Virginia, where they got the CIA headquarters that now these military infrastructure at, they can sit there and send a drone, Dr. Kaba, and wipe out a whole family that's having a janaza, a Muslim funeral in Afghanistan or whatever, or either wedding, wipe out the whole family, women, children, you know, men, whatever, and go back watch the Super Bowl, you know, like nothing happened. You know what I mean? This is what they did, and it's not just not me saying this. I've heard them say it themselves. They have did these kind of things. They can be so callous, so disregard for any kind of humanity. So you're dealing with a people that's so cold-blooded. And like you just told Brother Elliot, I've made that same point to them, too, about this show, Time from the Wake. And I said, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, the title of y'all show is so apropos, I said, because our people definitely need a true awakening, you know, because our people have been sex dogs, you know, blinded and brainwashed for so many years and infinite time by white supremacy. So we definitely need a time from the awakening. And as Brother Elliot always say when he come on, Dr. Kaba, you know, our people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, you know, quoting Hosea from the Bible. And that is so true, you know, because, you know, our people just don't know. And because we don't know, a lot of times in dealing with these Europeans, you know, we suffer, you know. So that's why brothers like yourself is so important, that Brother Elliot bring, you know, people like you on to educate us, so we are learning, you know. And when you talk about individual Caucasian people, I have no problem saying this. And Brother Elliot and them, they know where I stand on things. And like you just said, Dr. Kyle, I don't push my faith on nobody. Like you said, you don't have to push them. I'm a member of the Nation of Islam. I'm a student at Abdullah Muhammad. What I do is my own business. What I mean by that, Dr. Kyle, I practice my faith. I don't push it on nobody. When I call this station, I never bring up my faith unless, you know, it's related. Because the God I pray to is my own business. I don't push it on nobody. I study lead by example. And I've had Caucasian people on jobs I worked on, they said, "Yo, it's something different about you. You know, the way you carry yourself." And these are some have been cold-blooded bigots, but it's just the point that they see the way I carry myself. I lead by example. So I treat people the way I like to be treated, and I just carry myself in a dignified way. I had one of our elders, Dr. Cobb, who's an ancestor now, Brother Wayne, who's a legendary caller on Black Talk Radio. He made a comment on the radio one time about me and stuff. And here's a man that lived to be like 85, 86 years old. He said, "Brother," he said, "I look at Brother Joe." He said he's a prime example of a young man that carries himself the right. He's dignified. He treats people the way he likes to be treated, and he carries himself in a dignified manner. And people notice that about him. And he said it to a couple of the hosts on the terrestrial radio station. And I didn't ask him to do that. He did that because that's the way he felt about me, and I appreciated it. And that's all I'm saying, Dr. Calvin. You, like you said, you lead by example. Whatever faith you practice, whether it be Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Yoruba, whatever, you practice this, you carry yourself and you lead by example. You don't have to force nobody, because like you said, the law of attraction, whatever you're doing, if you're doing right, and like Brother Elliot, you know, added to the thing, people gravitate towards you. You know what I mean? They think what you're doing is right. They say, "Hey, whatever he's doing or he's she doing, I want to be like that." So you don't have to force it on nobody. You don't have to, you know, toot your own horn. You lead by example. And that's what it comes down to. And I'll say these last couple of things, Dr. Cobb, and I get off. Like when I worked at the hospital over in Jersey, this is what I said about individual Caucasian people. Back in the fall of 2002, I was out for almost 3 weeks from my job because I had to have eye surgery at the Wills Eye Hospital here in Philadelphia. I'm out, and I knew I was going to, you know, still get some of my money because I had my, you know, the long term thing. We out for a certain period of time, but two Caucasian girls on my job. I didn't ask them to do it. They took a collection for me. They collected about 200 something dollars from my coworkers. They mailed me a postal money order, a gift basket with fruit and everything on it. And they said, "Joe, no, we love you. We miss you." These are two white girls. And I appreciated that. And I thanked them from my heart because they did it from the heart. Now, while I'm doing that, there was two individuals, Dr. Cobb. I didn't go around and say, "Well, you know, all white folks is good, man." I had enough sense to realize these was two individual people. But like you said, as a group, that's where the problem comes in at. So I kept it in a proper perspective. I think too often, because of Caucasian people do something good for us as an individual, we start thinking, "Oh, I got a white friend or a white neighbor, they are good." And we know that's not the case, because they was all good, the world wouldn't be in a condition that it's in now. You know what I mean? So we got to be very clear on that. And like I said, Dr. Cobb, I just appreciate what you're bringing to the table tonight, because you're speaking truth to power. You know what I mean? And I do believe we're going to overcome these Europeans and their madness and stuff, because like you're dealing with people that's not just immoral, they are amoral, which means they lack morals. That's why they can do the callous things they do, shoot a brother down like what happened in Georgia back in February 23rd, and almost 3 months pass, nobody's charged. They can do these kind of things without any kind of remorse because they are very pretty much a remorseless people. So, I mean, we have to understand what we're dealing with. And I just thank you, Dr. Cobb, keep doing what you're doing. And I'll sit back and Ellie put me on mute and I listen to the remainder of the show. But thanks, Dr. Cobb, for what you bring to the table, brother. May the creator continue to bless you to keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, my brother Joe. I appreciate you, man. You keep on keeping on, brother. It ain't over till we win.
Yeah, I know that's right. And, thanks, family.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, one of the things that I was alluding to before that Brother Joe has brought to my attention is the fact that black folk have got to learn the difference between a friend, an enemy, and an ally. And by that I mean in World War II, Germany, Italy, and Japan were our enemies, and China and Russia were our friends or allies. After World War II, China and Russia became our enemies, and Japan, Italy, and Germany became our friends. And that's because they weren't friends, they were allies. And we have to understand, sometimes we hold on to people after the job gets done. We think they're our friends, and they're not. They were allies, because your ally can be a bigger enemy to you after the deed has been done than the enemy you both came together to fight for in the first place. We tend to hang on to people that we think are our friends. They were allies, but they had the potential to be our enemy. And we tend not to be able to identify the difference among a friend, an ally, and an enemy. And when you understand that, you can make decisions based on what is good for you and for your people. And to be able to, like Brother Joe said, there are good people in all cultures. We can't get caught up. Ma'at, spirituality does not allow us to be so culturally chauvinistic. It feels good. And because of the nature of what has happened to us, we're pissed off. And we're upset, and I understand that. But if you get to the science of it, you've got to open yourself up and understand that you have to judge as the particular situation shows itself. You can't go in with absolutes. You cannot turn away, because some of the things that I've learned has come out of the mouth of people I least want to hear it from. But many times, the Creator and the ancestors put those words in people's mouths to see if you are perpetually listening to your environment. And if you just cast aside what someone says because he's this or she's that. But they're telling you something that's very important. And it becomes important that we understand and be able to decipher critically, analyze, so that we don't get caught up in a situation that only puts us in a worse place. I understand how we got in this position. I know what has happened to us historically that has put us in this position. But I take full responsibility for the position I find myself in. And it's not because I'm forgiving somebody for what they did. I am taking full responsibility for the position I find myself in, simply because if you blame somebody else for the condition that you're in, you also give them the power to take you out of that position, but you also give them the power to keep you in. When I was teaching algebra, the one thing I came to realize, when you're dealing with an equation, only the variables are going to solve your problem. Only the variables are going to solve your problem. White people are not a variable in my problem. You only have one enemy. I only have one enemy. Each of us only has one enemy. And that enemy is that negative force within us that keeps us from being able to attain our divine duty, the purpose of our being born. Once you defeat that enemy that's within, everything without is an obstacle. The white man is not an enemy. The white man and the white woman, those that wish to oppress people of melanation, They are not your enemy. They are an obstacle in your life that you got to get over. Because once you defeat the enemy within, you can handle them. But if you go into handling them with a sense of either vacant esteem, lack of self-esteem, or whatever, a defeatist attitude, you'll never be able to overcome that obstacle. You only have one enemy. Everything else outside of you is an obstacle. That's what spirituality before religions is telling us. There is only one enemy that each of us has, and that is the Caesian forces, the negative forces within us. Defeat them. Understand who you are. And the way you can do this is, when I met Professor Clark, I was 12 and a half years old. I was getting out of the seventh grade. The overheads brought us up to Harlem, and Dr. John Henry Clark was speaking. There was about six young people there. And at the end, they brought us up to meet Dr. Clark. And Dr. Clark, when I was introduced to him, he said, oh, Booker T, you're going to be a great teacher one day. Okay, I'm 12 and a half. That's the last thing I'm thinking about. But he gave us a homework assignment. And this is a home. I'm a teacher, so I have to give all y'all a homework assignment. This is a homework assignment. This is what Dr. Clark told us. I want you to go home, and I want you to look in the mirror, and I want to tell you, I want you to tell the person that you're looking at, I love you and mean it. Because if you can't do that, there is nothing anyone else can do for you. That stayed with me all of my life. Even my children, my biological children, when they were growing up, they would look in the mirror when I was getting ready to go to work. And they always got a kick out of hanging at the door because I would always blow a kiss at myself and say, I love you. They got a kick. But I did that for a reason, because I took Dr. Clark to the next level. I actually demonstrated for my children what he had actually told me to do. We have to love ourselves, family. We have to love the shape of our nose, shape of our lips, the texture of our hair, our complexion, the way we look. The Creator doesn't make mistakes. You have to love yourself, really love yourself. And only when you love yourself can you love somebody else. Only when you love yourself and understand that you are the Creator having a human experience can you look to another human being and treat them like the Creator. But you can't do that if you don't love yourself, respect yourself, and think that everything about you is Creator-made. There is a lot of room for improvement. I've got a lot more that I've got to go in my life. There's so much. That's what makes life exciting for me. There's so much more to experience. There's so much more to be able to achieve and learn. But I love our people unconditionally. I love you, be you a pimp, a prostitute, a gangbanger. I love you wherever you are in your life, and I respect you, because you want to know one simple fact is this. If you are a black man or woman in this world today, but let's get specific and say the United States. If you are a black man or a black woman living in the United States, the fact that you are still alive, I got nothing but love and respect for you. Because the way they set this system up, we're not supposed to be here now. That's the big problem, you know. They don't know what to do with us because we're not supposed to be here. Because in their arrogant ignorance, when they brought us over here, they only had one job for us, and that was free labor. But now that we're out here showing our genius, making all this money, doing everything they do, and many times better than they do, this scares them. This wasn't supposed to happen like this. Didn't know what my daddy told me. And now I lost my job. And I had a good job. I was making six figures. And now I got to get on a food line. I ain't never been on a food line. I'm speaking about the person of European descent who has been privileged all his life. She has had everything she's ever wanted. And now all of a sudden, she's out of a good job that was paying her a lot of money. And now they got to get on food lines. They have to wait on checks to come. They have to close down their business. And now all of a sudden, they're looking around and they're saying, but wait a minute, it wasn't about black or Hispanic after all. It was about rich and poor. And I was stupid enough to go along with the okey-doke. And this is what they see. Time for us to get ourselves together, family.
We got 12 more minutes. Let me take this last call. 646, 646, you there? 646?
Yeah, what's going on with...
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, hold it. You there? No, call back. Got to call back. I dropped his call. Give us a call back, 646. Dr. Kaba,
yeah.
I'm glad to have you spend some time with us this evening. Very interesting conversation. I loved every minute of it. Richard.
Yeah, Richard.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Let's get you back. I don't know. You stepped away. Go ahead, 646. Go ahead. You got the
sorry about that, Richard and Elliot. Right quick. I just wanted to ask the brother this one question based on what he said a few minutes ago. Are you saying to us in the audience that the white man ain't the enemy? Because I remember 30 years ago reading Hakeem Olajuwon's book From Plant to Planet. He said that the white man was the perpetual enemy. And 30 years later, I could not disagree with him one iota over what I've read, seen, and experienced in dealing with the filthy, no good, stinking devil. So could you clarify that?
Well, I think it's a matter of semantics and how we're defining words. Because I understand that, because I also told you we don't know the difference sometimes between a friend, an enemy, and an ally. So I understand that word enemy. I'm getting more esoteric or spiritual with you when I say that. Because the human spirit can overcome anything. In the Cushite Kemetic language, there's a word that in our language, we use the word magic. Africans didn't believe in magic. They had a word, heka, to call forward the will to achieve. My concern is that when we give too much power to people outside of ourselves, many times we make their decisions the factor as to whether or not we're going to be able to do what we need to do.
Yep.
So the statement that I'm making is not so much that I'm using the word enemy differently right now. I'm using it more in a spiritual level. I know what they've done. I know how they act. I understand that. What I'm speaking to is the spirit within each and every one of us to understand that when you have things that you have to do in your life, there are voices, there are feelings that you have that question your ability. As a black man in America, we all grow up with this feeling of being defeated from birth. But that's an illusion. That's something that someone else is putting on you. And if you accept that, then it becomes you. And what I am saying is that once you defeat and put in its place the negative energies within you, you can achieve anything you want in your life, bar nothing, once you use heka, or the will to achieve. And when you put that will, like our ancestors did on the plantation, like our ancestors did when they built the pyramids. See, you don't have to go back to ancient Africa for a classical African civilization. Africans on the plantation in this hemisphere, they were a classical African civilization. Hip-hop culture is a classical African civilization. You want a classical African civilization? You want to see an African with class? You want to see a classical African? Look in the mirror. Because if you're still alive, you're a classical African. You are a god having a human experience. And we are gods amongst gods. But some of us have the Caesian negative forces.
Yes.
And if you go inside yourself and if you defeat that negativity inside and you say, it ain't over till we win. That's what I always say. Keep on keeping on. It ain't over till we win. That was the mentality of Marcus Mosiah Garvey and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, Martin Delaney. Okay, we could go back in time. Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, William Leo Hansberry. Back in the 20s, said if we could get this information into the minds of our people wouldn't act the way they act. If you understood you were a god on earth and your brother was a god on earth, your sister was a god, you would not mistreat your sister, you wouldn't put a gun to your brother's head, because you would understand that the divine in you respects the divine in them. When you defeat that within, all those negative forces that they have tried to get us to believe, that we're worthless, we're shiftless, we're ignorant. We're always talking about there's an achievement gap. There is no achievement gap. I've been in the most affluent white schools, and I've been in the most impoverished black ones. And I have found geniuses in both areas. It is not an achievement gap that our children suffer from. It's an opportunity gap. I left a school that had over 230 children in it. It had 12 laptop computers, of which 8 didn't work. So 4 computers had to be devised and distributed to teach computer class to over 230 children. I've been in other schools where every child walks in the building with a laptop. It's not an achievement gap. It's an opportunity gap, because if given an opportunity, not only will our children succeed, they will excel. And that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of black excellence. They're afraid of black power, because when you understand black power, you go back into the cosmos and you begin to understand that light is not the speed of light is not the fastest thing that exists. The speed of darkness is. Because everywhere that light goes, dark is already there. So it becomes important that we understand it. We still connected?
Yes. Was that an answer to your question? Caller?
Yeah, I mean, basically, he asked it on the manner in which he was going to answer it, but I think it's quite obvious in our dealings with this individual, as they call the white man. Nothing's ever going to change in regards to him. I mean,
that's already been stated, though. Us. That's already been stated.
But I mean, it's one thing to look at it from a practical experience, a spiritual experience, and just a experience, which unfortunately our people just don't have no type of ability of seeing it either way. And, you know, unfortunately, that's why we're in this stagnant position.
It has to be seen as one and the same, not an either or. And that's
It's an even or, Richard, because if it wasn't even or, we wouldn't be in the position that we're in.
Well,
but
at the same time, you can't, and that's what I hear Brother Kabbalah say, you can't overlook the we were the ones that liberated ourselves from chattel slavery. Nobody liberated ourselves from chattel slavery. Not I'm talking about North America, and we can look at IT as the same thing. Nobody liberated them. That ain't no distant history. I mean, you know, you can't overlook that. And the example of IT, and in the example of the utilization of the Christian church, it was African, the continuity, the retention of African spirituality and our social relationship. Now, that's why he's making the point that practical application is an internal search. And you can go back to commit. And that's that whole dialogue with the self, which is written there, that was a continuation of the civilizational process. And if you go back, you can go back even further to primary culture. It was their relationship to the environment and their understanding of their relationship to plants, animals, and even as things change, that was an internal to solve a practical problem. So it is when we do that dichotomy, in my understanding, then we are taking on, as you know, Brother had been a reference, we are taking on the European paradigm, because as he gave the example of Greece and Rome, they came into Kemet, studied, and then tried to emulate something by what they studied. They weren't living it because that wasn't their culture. And African culture is living that relationship, that person-to-personal relationship is a living relationship. And what we are challenged with now, because as we take on the value system of Europe, the Euro-American structure, we get into it's an either or. It's outside and inside, compared to we're only dealing with our own self inside. And I like the way you mentioned it, brother, as far as, and you have to help me with that, defining the reality, bringing the invisible visible. That's the way I'm interpreting, manifesting it. So, you know, when we bring up these paradigms of dichotomy, one, we put the power in somebody else's hand compared to putting the power in our own hands.
And that's really what I'm trying to stress more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
My proverb, I used to always teach the children this, my own children and the children I taught in school. This was what we used to say. If it is to be, it's up to me.
Right.
I take full responsibility for the condition I find myself in. It's not that I don't know who put me here. It's not that I don't understand. But if someone throws you in a pit, you can spend your time cursing the person that threw you in the pit and blaming them, or you can climb out the pit. I'm climbing up out of this pit. I know who threw me in. I see them very clearly. I understand how they did it. But we as a people have to look inward in order to look outward. We have to make some decisions now. And as difficult as it may be, we've got to make these decisions for the children yet to be born.
Exactly.
We have to create a society. We have to create a way of thinking. And I'm not telling you, if you're Christian, don't be Christian no more. I'm not saying to leave Islam. I am not saying to leave Hebrew Israelite. I am not saying to leave Rosicrucian or Buddhism. What I'm saying is to Africanize yourself. Spirituality is to a human like water is to a fish. And when a fish is taken out of water, they are specifically, we say they're acting like a fish out of water,
mm-hmm.
which means we're not acting natural.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're on natural and unnatural, the story about the crabs in the basket, everybody got stories about the crabs in the basket and about how we pull ourselves down every time one's going to try to get out. But I want you to look at that story a little bit differently, because I want you to take that basket of crabs and I want you to return it back into the waters from whence it came. And what you'll notice is that crabs climb on top of each other in order for the crab on top to eat. And when that crab on top is eaten, it then goes to the bottom of the heap and gets himself underneath and pushes the group up so that the next crab eats. And when that crab eats, it goes down and pushes the group up so that the next crab eats. And the point that I'm making is that a natural entity that is put in an unnatural situation, it is natural for a natural entity to act unnatural in a unnatural environment.
Mm.
But when you return that natural entity back into its natural environment, it conducts itself like nature mandated it to. And so when I see how we're conducting ourselves, I don't agree with it. I don't offer no excuses, but I do understand reasons. I'm not saying for us to put ourselves in harm's way, but I'm saying we have to understand that we have a shattered consciousness and a fractured soul. And we have got to put the pieces back together again. Like in chapter 43 of the book of the coming forth today by night, that's in the book Spirituality Before Religions, where Assar is putting the 14 pieces of his body back together again in order to become one, the Lord of eternity. And that's what we have to do. We have to put ourselves back together again, not just from the outside. We have to put our own selves together from the inside. We have been hurt systematically, transgenerationally. We have been hurt. And we have to recognize that hurt, own the hurt, make no excuses for that hurt and how you're acting because of the hurt. Because nature deals everybody cards, and that's the only card you're going to get. You got to play your hand wisely. And we've got to get ourselves in this place to understand. And I believe that spirituality is a place, a point of departure where our people can connect with themselves and to understand how great they really are, that you are an emanation of the Creator, worthy of everything wonderful and beautiful that you should have. And so should our children. And they deserve it. You deserve it. But you've got to claim it. Power is not something that you have. Power is something that you do. Let's do some black power. All power to the people.
Brother Jack?
Ashe, brother. That's all I can say. Ashe. Otep, is have a good day.
And let me say something before you leave. And let me say something to you before you leave, Jay. Listen, I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you. But the only thing about this, and you see it because you listen to this program and you're a participant, that we have to understand that we have to repair the minds of our people to move our people forward, and it's for our children. Now, I can spend time on this program and when we air our programs and do what you see some of our folks doing. Spend 2 hours talking about, this cracker, this and that. Listen, that might make me feel good and the few people that's listening, but how does that move our children forward? We have to prepare our children to move forward. If we give them the understanding of our people's great culture, history, our spirituality, then they're going to be able to see what's going on with this man. That's what, and we talked about it on this program tonight. The fear is causing this violence among this man. He fears our people. He fears our people. He put us in a situation where we don't know who we are, where we're following his morality, his religions, his belief systems. If we start focusing in on our children to re-educate their minds, to awaken the spirit in them, then all of these other things going to fall right into place. And this system going to fall faster than what we're seeing it now. I just think that we have to focus in on what we need to do. And when we focus in on us, then this other stuff, this other ancillary stuff going to take care of itself.
Well, Brother Elliot, I agree with you on that. But my sole premise on all of it is the most important thing. You must first educate your children on who the enemy is. Once they understand who the enemy is, then all of those things will easier come into play.
Yeah, but when you, but Jay, when you're teaching
them who the enemy is,
when you're teaching them about their history and what our people have experienced, children are going to ask you questions, and then you can give them the answers. You got to equip them. Children are going to ask you questions. You don't have to like force it in their minds. When you're presenting them the information, they're going to ask you other questions. In fact, I don't have to say that. Dr. Kaba, explain, kind of reinforce what I'm saying. Maybe I'm putting it wrong. You're an educator.
Well, I'm going to say something that's controversial and might not want to be heard.
Go ahead.
Because we got to drop it like it's hot here. And in my experiences in my life, as we define what an enemy is that would cause harm to me, some of the people who have been my greatest enemies have looked like me. So if I'm going to blanketly or absolutely accuse somebody of being an enemy as opposed to the content of their character being the enemy, then I put my children in jeopardy because I put them in a place where someone that looks like them, who carries the spirit of Urugu or the incomplete one, or is an enemy to my child, they will be allowed into my child's life, because if one person is my enemy, it means that the other person is not. Because then you would confuse a child. Because if you're going to say white folk are the enemy, you're automatically saying black folk are your friend. Because if you don't do it like that, if you don't do it as to relate to and understand the content of character, what you're going to eventually do is that child's going to be confused. And that child is going to embrace a person of African descent who means more harm to them than someone that might be of another culture. So when we lay out what the enemy is, we have to lay out the enemy as the way in which a person conducts themselves as a content of character. And when that happens, like, I never had to teach children about enslaving Africans was wrong. I just taught them what happened, and they came to their own conclusion.
Okay.
And none of them said it was a good thing.
Okay. All right.
They all understood what enslavement was and who was the ones that enslaved and who did it. And so, your brother Jack, I believe that's my brother's name.
Jay.
My name is
Jay. Brother Jay. My perspective is a bit more universal as it relates to being with children, 4 and 5 year olds, 6 year olds, how their mind functions, what they're able to bring in and understand and accept.
I'll just say this. I mean, we've basically, over the last 30 years, been in the same circles and been around the same people. We probably know each other from seeing each other at First World and other events. So the thing is, like I would say is, from studying the teachings and being around Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark, I could never say that what you just expound upon wasn't taught to us. You know what I mean? So when I say to educate a child that the Urugu is the enemy, you know, it has to be done with the understanding that we have some people that look just like us behave in the fashion of an enemy also, but to explain to them the reason why they act in that manner, which Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and Amos and them taught us over the years. So I understand what you're saying. And, you know, listen, man, we just have to, like you say, move forward and do what's best for our people so that, you know, we can survive in the future, like Elliot said, and our children could get to the point of the title of this program, The Awakening. And I think we are on that path collectively, more than we think.
No, Brother Jay, I agree with exactly what you said. The way I may espouse it may be different, but you're right in what you're saying. I agree with you. As a cultural group, I must identify them as an enemy. I remember Honorable Elijah Muhammad used to tell the story, there are 1,000 wolves outside your door. 100 of them would put their life on the line to protect you. You're ready to go outside. The problem is you don't know where those 100 are. Are you ready to go outside? Dr. Edward Scobie used to always say, Booker T, don't tell me nothing about good white people, because good white people act as shields for the bad ones. It's the good ones that...
Great. I was just going to say, you remember the great lecturer, the partner of Dr. Ben, Professor George Simmons. I know you know George.
Yes.
You remember
his great
lecture that I would love to get a copy of, that's maybe 20 or some years old, is The Black Man, the White Man Footstool. You remember that lecture. You understand?
Yes,
so,
I do.
You know,
yes.
like I said, man, we don't roll in the same circles. So we understand what you're saying. And you know, I know what you've done, like I'm saying, over these last 30 years with the education of the youth and all of those things. Are you still up in Co-op City?
Yes, man.
All right, brother. So, you know, I'll see you around. You know, we'll run into each other. Hotep is thank you again, brother, for the good work that you've always done for our people. Peace, brother.
Talk to you.
You can put me on hold, Elliot.
And Hotep to you, brother Jay. It's good talking to you. We're all on the same page, brother man. We're all heading in the same direction. We just happen to be in different vehicles.
Well, Dr. Kaba, you know, that time kind of flew by. I told you that.
Yes, it did.
But I want to thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, man, I want to thank you for this opportunity, my brother. And if I may address you as Brother Booker, I told you, man, we have a connection here.
Y'all going to make Booker, me feel some kind of way over here now.
And my brother Richard. I thank you for this opportunity, and I thank the community for their time. The most precious thing that we have, cosmically speaking, is time. And I appreciate you taking this time out of your schedule to be here today and just have this conversation. I appreciate your support. You can get my book, Spirituality Before Religions, on Amazon. You can get my book on William Leo Hansberry on Amazon. You can go to my website, www.kabakamene.com, KABAKAMENE.com. You can download my free 6-day e-course on my book, Spirituality Before Religions, and also you can download for free my study guide. Dr. Clark always said, you may not get to your destination, but if you draw out the right map, those that come behind you will. This study guide is my roadmap towards educating our children and our community in terms of who they are and what they must do. You can also go to my webinar that I did on Spirituality Before Religions last week at www.sbrwebinar1.com. And we're coming up with our second webinar the last Sunday in May. And so this is the work that we're doing, family. This is what we're attempting to do. And I thank you for your support. I thank you for the time that you've spent. And again, blessings and all my greatest regards to my family there in Philadelphia. It is a place that I enjoyed. Back in the day when I was a flesh eater, I used to always go to Rib Crib up there on Germantown. I used to be kicking them ribs. I used to drive from New York to 630, 34, something like that, Germantown Avenue. Go to the Rib Crib. I used to always argue with the professor because he wouldn't give me no extra sauce. And I said, brother, I come from New York for your ribs. You can give me a little extra sauce.
Oh, man.
But, hey, and then down the road from that is the Asara Set community that I had a chance to visit. And so Philadelphia has always been a very special place. I gained a love for pretzels in Philadelphia. I never had pretzels like they had in Philadelphia. So Philadelphia is a place. It is a place of sisterly and brotherly love. And I just love us unconditionally, and I respect us. And I say, keep on keeping on, because it ain't over till we win.
Dr. Kaba, I'll be in touch with you. You know, this is the first time you've been on the program, but it ain't going to be the last.
I'm looking forward to it. We have a lot to talk about, family. I'm here for us to make sure we can get through this the best possible way. And to all of the callers that called in to speak to us, I thank you for the time you took to vocalize. We're all heading in the same direction. Let's just keep on keeping on. So thank you again, Brother Booker. Thank you, Brother Richard, and to all that were in attendance this evening. I am a better person right now for having gone through this wonderful experience and this fellowship. So thank you for the opportunity.
We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, now.
Richard, interesting dialogue this evening, man.
Yes, 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 yes.
you know, more and more. You know, I like to talk about these particular subjects because it's kind of close to me and dear to my heart when you talk about the religion and getting to the bottom of these things. I'm glad that he was able to shed some light on a lot of different subjects tonight. And it ain't going to be the last time he's going to be on. Before we leave the program, and you know, some things that, but we'll talk about them later on with Friday or whatever. Some things I want to touch on, some current events that we'd be dealing with that is always interesting to expound and get the viewer's viewpoint on a lot of these things. But we'll catch up with a lot of these things on Friday's program. Before we leave this evening, I want to give out the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Always interesting dialogue and conversation on African Perspectives. That's, again, that's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. From 1 to 3, Black People's Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones. That's on 1 to 3 on Mondays and Wednesdays. At 6 to 8 on that same Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. That's 6 to 8 on Time for An Awakening Media. First and third Mondays of every month, Conversation Reparation. That's in Cobra's program from 9 to 10 on Time for An Awakening Media. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for An Awakening Media. Also, Black Reality Think Tank Part 2 on Saturdays with the sisters that are hosting, and I don't have their names in front of me, two sisters that host the program on Saturday, Black Reality Think Tank Part 2, and that's from 4 to 6 on Saturday afternoons. Time for an Awakening is back on Friday from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media, and Warren Valentine's Night Talk podcast will start to be rebroadcast starting tomorrow on Time for an Awakening Media. It was a little hiatus there, but it'll be back in motion from 10 to 12 every Monday evening, Monday to Friday, on Time for an Awakening Media. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. School. If we know all-
to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.